Everyone, welcome to another episode of Pac-Man Pick-One Podcast. I'm here with Mason Lang,
hey
all, Alec Haste,
Tiny Rick,
and we have a special guest this time, our good friend Ryan Adams, who has a common and uncommon cube. Welcome, Ryan.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
We're happy for you to be here, considering I've talked about your cube about 8,000 times in the 10 episodes that we've recorded.
Yeah, and you're actually shipping out to Tennessee.
Indeed.
So,
the proper verbiage there is abandoning us
to go to the fucking south, you hillbilly.
Dude, I would. Get the fuck out of here.
So, but yeah, being transferred for work, so we had to get you on here in person at least once before you shipped off so we could talk about your sweet cube, which I got to draft this last weekend. It was awesome.
Oh my god, his cube's the best, isn't it?
We went through a lot of hoops, but yeah, we managed to get you in.
Yeah, yeah.
Despite the odd number.
But. Yeah, ended up having a 7-person draft.
How many rounds did you guys wind up playing?
We ended up just going round robin. A couple people dropped out after round 3 because they didn't like their decks. So,
yeah. Oh, wow, what a bunch of lame asses.
Yeah, I agree. No, I was very satisfied with the draft. I had a lot of fun with the draft portion itself. It was very refreshing. I was talking to Alec about this earlier today, that, like, going from, like, a Legacy-style cube like mine, where there's, like, every card is very powerful, but there's definitely a disparity in power level between cards. You know, there's just very obvious first picks, very obvious archetype-defining cards, and going into your cube where...
Well, there will be once we re-add Soul Crypt and Mana Ring.
Soul Crypt and Mana Ring, huh?
Yeah, close.
And then going into a common and uncommon environment where the power level is much more flat across the board. Like, your picks become much more intensive. And I really, really enjoyed that. It was a fresh perspective, because I've never drafted a common and uncommon cube before, ever. Even when you had one, Mason, I think, like, that was when I first met you. I didn't even really know what cube was.
Right, yeah. So, mine didn't survive super long after yours got built. So, yeah. Overall, I don't think there was too much overlap. But it's just hard to get people together in those days to actually...
We didn't have a defined group yet. You know, everybody was still kind of getting to know each other. We were all coming from different places, so...
No kidding.
But, Ryan, we have a pack cracked here on Cube Tour. Do we want to start there, or do you want to have some opening words about your cube first?
Yeah, do you want to explain to us? What inspired you to build your cube?
What inspired me to build the cube is I wanted to experience this, to build my own sets, to create an experience that's enjoyable to people, to kind of bridge the constructed and limited experience, so that we could offer the best sampling of commons and uncommons throughout the ages. But with some amount of archetypal cards to allow us to avoid just kind of pure card quality determining the matchups.
Sure. So those are all really great reasons to build a cube. Why did you choose common and uncommon specifically? For me, it was a budgetary reason. Like, yeah, didn't have.
Yeah, mostly dollars. But I enjoyed the experience of finding new cards. Like I.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I've been very messaging you, very excited, going, oh, this card.
I've never even heard of this card. It's so cool. Isn't this super powerful?
Well, yeah, because when you start taking out, like, you know, with, like, a Legacy Zal cube like mine, once you, like, cut all of these, like, Survival of the Fittest and Gristlebrand and things like that, like, now all of a sudden your power level goes down and, like, everything opens up. And Magic having so many cards, you know, at those rarities, obviously them being the bread and butter of limited and constructed environments, like, now your options are almost endless.
Well, it's interesting when you distill your style, your Legacy style cube, down the cards that are in my cube. The cards that survive from yours are on there purely on rate.
Right.
Swords to Plowshares, Treasure Cruise, Lightning Bolt. Those style of cards are you have. Your aggro decks, I drafted a red green beatdown deck. I first picked Blood Raid Elf in your cube Friday night, and I first picked Blood Raid Elf in my cube. And the cards were somewhat different.
Yeah.
I didn't have a survival, I didn't have a scavenging ooze.
Right.
But that my curve and stuff if we want to look at those two decks, would be very similar, and that the cards and the card quality was not that different.
Yeah.
When you then need to build an archetype or build build your deck beyond cards that are there purely on rate, that's the exciting part. See cards.
I actually think it's really impressive when the decks come together, because as different the power level are, some of the cards in your cube versus some of the cards in Josh's cube, I think it's pretty funny that once the decks come together and all the synergies are kind of humming, whether or not your deck is out of your cube or out of his cube, they're still powerful. They still feel really good. Mm-hmm. Generally, I think it was maybe last year, maybe a little bit longer, that we did two different cube drafts at the same time. I don't know if you guys remember this, and I drafted Ryan's cube over here, and you guys had your cube draft going over there, and I played against one of the Papke brothers after the cube drafts were over. I played my undefeated, like, blue-red, splash-white Delver deck versus Papke's deck out of your cube, and I fucking ran his ass over. I was just like, Delver into Goblin Electromancer, Desperate Ravings, discard some cards, fuck it, just, oh, and it was great. I fucking crushed him. Meanwhile, he's like, demonic tutoring for Gristlebrand and show and telling. I'm like, yeah, show and tell. All right, put in Mistraven, bounce your Gristlebrand. Get fucked. But, I mean, like, that shit was super dope. But, it was just, I mean, once you get the decks together, they really function really well. I kind of have this theory in Magic that once you take a step back and you look at maybe an unexplored card, and you chase the rabbit hole and you start finding all the other cards that work well with this card that you want to play, chase this is the same way.
Chase the rabbit hole? Yeah. No, you chase the rabbit or go down the hole. It's a hole.
Go, chase go, the rabbit down the hole.
Go down the rabbit hole.
I abbreviated. I cut out entire words in order to save time. And no one else had an issue with it except for you. That means you're so fucking stupid.
Analogies. The abridged version.
Yeah. I don't understand how you didn't get it.
You may say
he got it, but the problem was he got it and had to correct you.
Gosh, thank you for really interrupting what I was saying with your...
Well, I mean, whatever topic it was would probably be equally stupid.
That's fine. Instead of me getting at this thing that I was going to talk about, let's talk about something else instead. Alec, what do you think?
Of the common and uncommon cube?
Whatever. I just want to hear your opinions on things. Please, go on. Really, I mean it.
That's a deep rabbit hole to chase after, Mason.
I understand where you're going with it, Mason, because you started that... we've talked about that before a couple times, where you find this one card that's, like, a little bit unexplored, maybe has some synergies with in its day and constructed or whatever, but, mm-hmm. like, doesn't see a lot of the light of day, and then you find all the other cards that go along with it, and you're like, oh, man, these are all crazy options, too, and then you find cards that go along with those, and now all of a sudden you have this whole other suite of cards that can now fit into your cube that you never even would have thought before.
Mm-hmm. So, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, before you do want to dive into Crackpack, when we kind of outline the cube and the color combinations and maybe where those color combinations are looking to go with some of the themes and our time.
Yeah, that would definitely help with us trying to, you know, analyze some picks.
So
and
my cube is a 450 card common uncommon cube. I have the most liberal interpretation of common uncommon as possible to allow for the greatest range of power level, even within a fairly narrow power band. You could certainly put a Library of Alexandria in this cube. There's Skull Clamp, Blackstone Warhammer, Channel.
Anything that's ever been printed as common.
Anything, Goblin Trenches.
Printed rarity.
Any of the online-only sets, Vintage Masters, other things like that. I've taken anything and everything. And so that we... I've tried to make it such that it's not purely a good stuff cube. When you make a common and uncommon cube, good stuff only, that you don't have any... The cards all have synergy to some extent, but they don't form archetypes. I feel like you can end up oftentimes in Pauper, where the winner of the game is they all turn into attrition matchups, that someone that can... that has an effect that's repeatable, like a Capsize.
A Miss Meta Witch.
Yeah, those kind of things. Those eventually... The power, because the power band is narrow, you eventually just grind some
grind them out.
Not to mention, it takes all fucking year to finish those games.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and I mean, if you look at a lot of, you know, when I was building my Common Uncommon Cube, you know, a big way that I built it up was just I would look at individual limited formats and be like, what were the best commons and uncommons out of that limited format? And I would just like, oh, these are probably applicable to my cube, shove them on in there.
Yeah.
And I know you've mentioned this before, Ryan, when you do that with various limited formats, you get a lot of the same cards over and over again. Oh, this black creature that kills a creature when it comes to play. Or, oh, this red one drop or two drop or this burn spell. Like, and suddenly you just have a cube full of, like, the same thing over and over and over
again.
Various mana costs.
And you start... That's where, when I started the skeleton of this cube, which I believe was Adam Straborski's Common and Uncommon Cube, that there were certain color combinations that I've completely redone, the blue and black specifically, because they ended up being essentially tribal strategies of various things. That blue was tribal mind controls, black was tribal necrotals.
You talked about that, but I was that, like, there's like six necrotals in the black section.
Yeah, you have, you can, that, well, having redundancy of those effects is certainly important, that you can end up with decks that feel very, they can be very constrained if they're not facing the opponent that they're looking
at. It's almost very anemic, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, you can certainly have plenty of times where it's like, I'm playing my control opponent, I have a Necrotal in hand, I cannot play it because it will kill it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
well, yeah, you just mentioned, you know, Mono Necrotal versus Mono Mind Control. Like,
that sounds like a fun
one
matchup.
Of those guys is favored.
So, I've tried to introduce archetypes, and so I've allowed myself some wiggle room in the power level to support synergy-driven things. So I can really support archetypes, that you have aggro decks, you have mid-range decks, usually leaning toward attrition-style decks, but you have control decks. You have combo decks, which are trying to support some combo in here now.
Bounce lands!
So you're starting,
any bounce land deck.
You're starting to have these... You can truly have the constructed experience where you can follow the different, you know, you go from prison to, like I said, to aggressive decks. You know, those kind
and
of
when
decks.
We when we talk about, you know, the power level of the cards in your cube being fairly narrow, and something that Josh has mentioned a couple times since yesterday, is that when you have a flatter power level, it seems like everything's playable. Like, you open up a pack and you're like, man, I could really pick whatever I want, like, this is so cool. And that, I mean, that lends itself to a really awesome experience, because you're like, man, I really want to draft a blue-red tempo deck, I want to draft a combo deck, I want to draft a control deck, and you're like, I feel like there's something in me, in the pack, for me, whatever direction I'm going.
Almost said that heart of the card bullshit.
Yeah.
There's something inside of me that's also in the pack. Yeah. I don't...
Yeah, my picks became, I ended up drafting a Grixis control deck that I had decided upon doing very early in the draft.
It's a really good deck.
And I splashed green for, I had a Beast Within in the sideboard, and I had a Necrogenesis that was also ended up in the sideboard at the end of the draft, but I sided in every single game, so by the time we took pictures of the deck at the end, I just had it in the main deck because it felt like a main deck card.
Right.
But basically a three-color control deck, and every pick was very, very hard because all of the cards that went into my deck, like, the power level was all very, like, very equal, and it was hard for me to strategize what I thought could wheel because everything felt so strong.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas opposed to, like, you know, in my cube, if you open a pack with a bunch of black cards and you're like, well, I'm going to pick this Recurring Nightmare because it's never coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these
and
will,
I'm gonna wheel
and it doesn't matter what.
Yeah,
because something's going to come back.
Fine.
Whereas in this cube, I was like, any of these could just be gone by the time they get back to me.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, by the time this pack comes back to me, because they're all very
good.
Especially
when, you know, you have so many powerful cards that are all pretty flexible.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, you don't have to stretch that far to play a Flame Tongue Kabu in whatever red deck you have.
Right.
Across any end, like, any part of the spectrum.
Cards dope.
Which
Do you also think that maybe your relative inexperience... Like, maybe if Ryan, you know, it's his cube, he's drafting your Grixis deck, and he's like, okay, I want X card or Y. Maybe they seem better to you, or less likely to wheel, per se.
Right.
As opposed to, like, with your cube, when we draft it all the time, you can almost guarantee what's going to wheel.
Yeah.
Unless it's Gravecrawler.
Right. God, yeah, that's an aside.
Whatever the case, like... I mean, do you think it's possible anyway that maybe like, you looking at those cards. If Ryan's standing over your shoulder, he's like, I can pick X, Y, and Z.
Ryan always knows what he wants to do. He is always this exact thing.
I was passing to Josh.
Yeah. He was on my right. So.
Now, Josh did destroy the integrity of the draft by planting his flag. that he was going to draft the Zombie Matters archetype, which we...
Well, because we were talking about how there was only seven of us, because our eighth ended up dropping due to unforeseen circumstances, and so I was like... And Ryan goes, well, a solution to this was I just added all these zombie cards, I want to see if, like, the God Zombie deck is good, I could take them all out, have that as a separate deck to the side, and face people, after they drafted. Really funny. And I said, but I really wanted to force that. And then I realized after I'd said that, I was like, well, now people know that I want that deck, so I'm not going to draft that deck. And it was just fed to me.
So
the whole time, and I didn't take a single card.
Yeah, so cue the zombie tribal deck, Circling the Drain.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, obviously.
You got Diagraph Cap'n 14th?
Yes, Diagraph Cap'n 14th. The zombie war chief went around twice. Yep. Past me, and I was like, undead I saw it the first
chief?
Time, and I was like,
Undead Warchief.
Or, yeah, Undead Warchief. And I was like, it the first time, and I was like, oh, this hasn't been picked yet, because it was like third or fourth pick, I think, in pack one. And I was like, well, here's my chance. I was like, no, I'm already in this, like, I already have some controlling cards. I don't really want to, like, make this, like, weird control aggro deck, right? So I'm just like, tribal synergies, and I'm like, I'm just going to split myself. So I shipped, and I was like, somebody will pick it up down there. I know they will. Came back around, and I was like, Damn it, man.
Every single person had the same thought.
No, man. I had 10 picks, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like,
So there were some interesting cards that you got fairly late. Mirror Match.
Yeah.
Which
I ended up not playing. You asked me at the end of the draft, you're like, you didn't play this in your main? And I was like, I don't know, is it good?
Mirror Match, for those wondering...
Uninitiated.
It is an instant from the Commander 2015 edition of those prepackaged Commander decks. It's four blue for an instant that...
you can only play inside of...
Yeah,
only
in the blocker step.
It
does some weird stuff with the rules to allow it to be cast in the blocker step. And essentially clones all of the attacking creatures
and puts them in front of each
other. And then blocks their
respective clone.
Yeah,
yeah.
So you get what functions as a wrath most of the time, as well as triggering all of their end of the battlefield abilities.
Yeah,
which is sweet.
Yeah. Which in hindsight, in several matchups, would have been very good for me.
Yes.
I just didn't know to play it.
Yeah, again, and this is, I didn't really answer your question, Alec. Like, that's a card that I would not have, had I drafted his cube a bunch, would have obviously known, oh, this is a sweet pick, like, and maybe would have even picked it before. Now, I ended up, like you said, getting it late in the draft, but, like, I would have included it, but with that inexperience, I had no idea how good that card could be.
Well, and So that's some of my joy is looking for through these supplemental products. Love those Commander decks. I get a lot of cards out of them.
How about the Masters series online? The one that were just also, nothing but reprints, but they did it all at weird rarities.
Vintage Masters had Goblin Trenches, which is
even then, what's the reprint that they never did in paper? I mean, Vintage Masters, obviously, they never did in paper, but
they did
Tempest.
They did Tempest Remastered.
Yeah,
Tempest Remastered, and they did like a. I thought it was called like the Masters series or something. It was like Masters 1.
Those also exist. Those were just reprints to get cards online. Those are very old.
Yeah, that's how you got all like, really dual lands were in the Masters. Yeah. Like, the original duels were in those. Yep. And I think those had some weird shit too. Like Sinkhole, I think, was like an uncommon somewhere in there.
Sinkhole was a common in Alpha.
Yeah.
I have an Alpha Sinkhole in the cube.
Yeah, and I think it was...
Which is dope.
Yeah.
It's just because it's Alpha. That's
You're right.
I will comment on what Alec was talking about. And I actually think one of the funniest things about Ryan's cube, and I think I've mentioned this before on the stream, is everyone kind of has their own opinion on what the best cards are all the time. So, talking about Josh's inexperience with the cube or whatever, leading him to, evaluate cards differently, I think that's really funny because me and Ryan, who have, built really similar cubes and, played the shit out of them over the course of years... still disagree on cards constantly. We're like, this is the best card. No, this is obviously the best card. You're dumb. That card sounded good. All right. Like, it's fine in some decks, but why would you ever play it? We had a rotisserie draft of your cube a few months ago where we had all kind of been kicking, like, talking about what we were going to first pick. Well, I was like, slam, no contest, definitely first pick Palaka Worm. Well, I was not first pick in the draft. I was eighth pick. I was the last pick. And right in front of me, at seventh pick, was my brother Creighton, who also thought Palaka Worm was the best card. So I was like, damn it!
Yeah.
I think Ryan, or your wife Jess?
My wife Jessica had the first pick.
Wound up being the first pick. And they just picked something like that I would never first pick in a million years.
Sylvan Library was what my wife picked.
Oh, really? I thought she picked Force of Will. See, that's, okay.
Sylvan Library.
And then you wound up picking Loxodon. You thought the first pick was Loxodon Warhammer, right?
I still think that Hammer is probably the best card.
It's pretty serviceable. And it made it all the way down to number 7, and Creighton's like, I don't know, Lightning Bolt or something. I don't know. It was some mono red card. It might not have been Lightning Bolt, but at the same time, it might have been.
I'm not really sure.
But he was just like, I figured no one had taken any red cards yet. No one ever plays mono red anyway. I was going to take Lightning Bolt. So then it's all the way to me at 8th pick.
Where was Jim?
Where was Jim?
Yeah, right.
The last spot, and I'm like, I got the card that I thought was literally just the slam dunk best card in the cube, so I got to take Palaka Worm on Burial Rites. Like, blew my mind that I was just going to get to take the exact cards that I wanted.
So it's funny, I had a couple pieces of green fixing because I picked up the Necrogenesis early, and I just had this weird love for that card. So I was already had some...
like murder porn. It wouldn't surprise me that you like Necrogenesis.
That is pretty fucked up.
I had the Simic Bounce Land, and I had I had Savage Lands. And I saw Palaka Worm come to me, and I was like, I know Mason thinks that this is the best card in this cube, because I'd heard you guys talk about that before.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked Ryan, I'm like, is it worth splashing a triple color off card because it's the best card in the cube? And he's like, I don't know. And I passed it to him, he's like, Mason certainly seems to think this is the best card. I don't know if it is. And then, like, then two more people right after you, Sam and somebody else, are like, oh, it's the best card in the cube. And they pass it. It's the best card in the cube.
There's something really beautiful in that, where you're going to have, you know, 8 or 10 people sitting down for the exact same thing, and all of them get to take the card they wanted to because no one else thinks it's the best card. Like, to me, that's really beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great introduction to the kind of limited environment you're walking into, where you just, everything is good, the points don't matter, do whatever you want.
Yeah, I have to say I was very enamored with your cube. Like, only one draft. I've only done one draft, and I was already talking to Alec this morning. I was like, Ryan's leaving. I kind of want to make a common uncommon cube to have, like, alongside my legacy one. I already fell in love with the format. Like,
I probably have most of the cube in, like, cards that I, like, foiled out, or, like, I probably have, like, a whole other common uncommon cube that is cards that either I foiled out and have the other one, or whatever.
Or cut over the years.
So you said you went into, you ended up in a 4-color deck.
Yeah.
So the cube is I built the cube to follow pretty traditional 2-color, it's a base 2-color cube that I designed it that way. You'll usually find that there will be somewhere between 2 and 3 drafters that are in 3 or more colors, or have a splash.
It's always me. Hi.
I did restrict the fixing. There are only 3 cycles of lands in the cube.
Which is actually pretty light for 450.
I have the Khans and Alarblock Trilands. I have the Ravnica Bounce Lands.
Don't tell me you cut the Vivid Lands.
No, and I have all 5 Vivid Lands. Those are the 3 man fixing cycles, and then I have the Rainbow, the various Rainbow Lands. Gemstone Mine, Transguild Promenade, City of Brass, those style of cards. But that's it for the fixing. I wanted you to, if you wanted to go more than one color or more than 2 colors, that you're gonna have to work for it.
Yeah.
That was a thing. So when I built the cube around 2-color archetypes. So the 2-color archetypes and kind of their speed kind of are this. White blue, blink. Very similar to the Modern Masters
2017
drafts that are going now. Blink, Flying Matters. I still
haven't done one of those.
Yeah,
me either. It looks dope.
Yeah. I've only done about 30. So.
Yeah, but that's all you do with your free time is draft.
Rich motherfucker.
Well, the thing is, they're on leagues right now, so you can get through one in about, like, I don't know, 2 hours. So usual habit of, like, doing 2 or 3 a day has become, like, 7 or 8 a day. Just, like,
doesn't that get expensive as shit, though?
If you don't win, yeah.
Like, yeah, I guess it's two.
So I've yet to post worse than a 2-1-1.
I only win at draft.
On leagues. I mean, like, leagues are super easy, though, because if you lose the first round, you're like, oh, that sucks, but I get two more, and, like, you run off some wins. So, yeah, like, if you... So the 2-1s that I have been getting, if you go 2-1, it costs you, like, basically another, like, I don't know, $10 or something to get into another draft, which obviously would get expensive, but every time you spike one, you get, you know, 6-packs or whatever, and if you open anything good, you get more. So it kind of... So, it's not so bad as long as you win a lot.
Sure. So,
okay. Leagues suck, though.
White, blue, blink, flying matters. We've added some of the more flying matters cards. This is a mid-range style of deck. The cards like Mist Meadow Witch, Azorius Guildmage,
Momentary Blink.
Momentary Blink all puts you into this style of deck.
Crystal Shard.
Crystal Shard as well. Let's see. So white, black. White, black is a lot of tokens. But more in the aristocrat style of that you're looking to sacrifice tokens for value to be a very mid-range, but some more of an attrition deck, sometimes with like almost a combo finish
where you're
going to sacrifice several tokens to make a large Bloodthrone Vampire and Antuco Husk and get through with it, or to just machine gun them out with a Blood Artist.
Yeah, very similar to what you find in like my Legacy cube.
Yes.
Almost the same.
I would say most of those pieces are...
I was going to say, minus like things like Gravecrawler or what have you, like, you know, most of your deck.
But the cards you replace those things with aren't that bad. Like, the cards
like, the decks exist almost like the same exact way, minus a couple cards. Right. So.
And then, I was just going to say, and then you actually get some even sweeter cards that are included in his cube that aren't yours, like Zealous Persecution's in your cube, right? Yes. That's not in your cube,
right?
But that card's insane for that deck. Very good. You know, in a way, you almost get this white black tokens deck in his deck in his cube that can come together better than yours, despite not having the rares.
Right.
So that's kind of nice.
So white red is your certainly an aggressively slanted color pair. You have I've trimmed a lot back on the. Traditional like white or red aggro cards, and white and red is predominantly go wide. Lots of dragon fodders,
Gather the Townsfolk.
Gather the Townsfolk, those style of cards with anthems,
bushwhackers,
rally the peasants.
Bushwhackers,
Thatcher's Revolt.
No,
haven't gotten that deep yet.
We're getting that in the horror queue.
a very aggressive color pair. Looking to use anthems. Intangible Virtue is kind of the defining card, or Goblin Trenches are kind of defining cards for this kind of archetype. White Green is one of the more heavily curated archetypes in the cube. Is +1/+1 counters matter.
Which is pretty recent. That was a push
mid range. So starting with the +1/+1 counter lords from the cons block, Abzan Falconer giving all your creatures that have the Outlast ability, but they grant an ability to all of the creatures with counters on them. So starting that Juniper Order Ranger would be a defining card of this.
Love me some Juniper Order Ranger.
I've done some dirty things
with he and I so are
those
best
style
of
cards. Travel Preparations from the Innistrad block.
Very powerful.
Tried and true staple.
That archetype is certainly a more mid-range archetype for this cube. So let's see, blue black. Blue-black is the most recent change. We've added a significant amount of zombie tribal cards, but it's also certainly your control colors. It's a very controlling combination, even with the zombie cards, that you're looking to do. The zombie has an attrition element with a Diagraph Captain, but you have your traditional control cards, all of the sweeper-esque effects, Pestilence, Mirror Match, Fade Away, Havoc Demon, all of the ways that I've had to contort to get a sweeper-esque effects into the cube.
Yeah, well, that's one of the kind of interesting parts about the Common Uncommon cube experience is that, like, tried and true, just 4-mana tap the thing, like, tap mana, everything's dead. Like, Wraths don't really exist, so any Wrath you want to get in there has some kind of a condition on it, whether it deals a few damage to everything, a Pyroclasm-style card.
Yeah,
those are fine, but obviously aren't going
to. Like, I had to draft Slice and Dice as like my premier Wrath in my Grixis deck. Ended up being very good for me throughout the whole draft.
Slice and Dice is very powerful. You Schmalzer had a lot of your cards.
He did.
Flood is the
Flood
a style of it's not only a Wrath, but you can invalidate
a
three
lot.
Or four creatures by the in the
you
long
can invalidate
game.
People's entire decks.
Yeah, you really can. Yeah.
with that style of card.
Washout.
The various mass bounce effects, Aetherize, Washout, and then, yeah, some of these more esoteric ones. Fade Away, which acts as almost like a Tabernacle style of effect.
Yeah, or even like a, it's like a blue balance in a way.
Yeah, something like that. Or
haha, nice tap out. All your stuff's dead. Well, yep. Some of it's dead, at least.
No! Mirror Match, which allows you to kind of block things. And then black has your Pestilence, where you pay a black mana, deal a damage to everyone and every creature.
Yep.
That you can scale. It has Havoc Demon, which is if you can sack it for, is a static -5/-5 to all your creatures.
And red has a plethora of different burn spells that either shoot off multiple creatures or,
yeah,
you know, arc lightnings and arc trails and shower of coals and,
yeah,
all those different,
mm-hmm,
style,
so you,
cards.
But yeah, within blue black specifically, you have and then all of your various removal, you know,
the
go for throw, do all of your doom blades, and, yep, then all of your counter spells.
Yep.
So the blue black, it has a very traditional home, but I've added this zombie tribal element. Blue red is kind of a split color combination. We have very aggressive spells matter style of cards, Monetary Swift Spear,
Any Prowess Creature, Goblin Electromancer,
yeah,
Delver of Secrets.
Those style of cards. And then we have this long game cards that Josh was alluding to. We have Slice and Dice, we have Shower of Coals, those style of cards. Rite of the Raging Storm, which is
that's a popular one.
A very interesting control style finisher. You have the premier blue control finisher in Rise from the Tides.
That was my whole deck was built around resolving Rise from the Tides.
That pairs with the large number of instant sorceries you're gonna play.
Yep. Were we recently talking about Rise of the Tide being stupid?
We were gonna put it. I was talking about it in the Horror Cube, and there's like this weird consensus that you either support the Rise deck in Innistrad specific cubes. People on the Reddits I've seen talking a lot about either supporting Rise or you support
Burning Vengeance
or Spider Spawning. Like, you either support like the self mill all creatures or like the all spells version, and we argued like, why not both? Like, there's no reason you can't do both.
Yeah,
and
both are great.
And we talked about like how good Rise is. It might even be good enough for like Legacy Cube, just as being
it's
this
really
premier blue
card.
Like finishing right. card. So, but it was very good for me. I mean,
Ryan,
killed every
said,
single one
said
of my
it's
opponents
been,
with
it's
it.
It's just changed the game for blue.
Yes,
control
that
yes.
blue control decks previously were trying to win with large flyers, like Air Servant, Aaron Ephemeron, Jetting Glasskite, those style of cards.
Mm-hmm.
And were just, they couldn't, because they, because like, we lack a true sweeper, that you would have to hold up, I have to hold up my 8 mana for Flood or I'm going to die. You couldn't really play a tap out game without the sweeper. So when you would tap out for your large finisher, it would often die. Or even if you had a Force of Will or a Daze or something, some sort of free man way to protect it, you just struggle to win the game
mm-hmm.
efficiently. The blue black, like I said, traditional home or blue red has this split kind of personality where we have these very aggressive red cards, mainly driven by the red cards with the burn spells or this much more controlling archetype.
Sure.
Blue green is always a particular trouble spot for most cube designers.
Across the spectrum.
It's very challenging to find a definite home for this one. In cubes that have don't have a rarity restriction, blue green can often end up being counters. Style of +1/+1 counters matter style of cards using Prime Speaker Zagana,
yeah.
Master Biomancer, that style of effect. I tried for a long time to support a Flash style of archetype in this color combination.
Which is sweet.
It just lacked power.
I'm going to show my support for the blue-green Flash archetype.
It just didn't have enough power. So we've always kind of traditionally supported the ramp style of cards with the... the
ramp style.
Draw three player
Urban Evolution.
Urban Evolution style of
cards.
Oh,
you mean when they staple Divination and Explore to each other?
Indeed.
Like, that's a new Magic card.
Yep.
Throw it on the printing press.
Yeah, so that's the effect. But I think, this has just been a recent transition, but I think we're going to make blue-green is combo. Blue-green is the home of the Peregrine Drake combo, which exists in this cube, allowing you to
my favorite thing in the entire
generate
world.
Infinite mana with Peregrine Drake. You can generate infinite.
Don't people get butthurt about that card?
Infinite blinks of a an effect. Infinite sinkholes with acidic slime or whatever.
Can I just little thing? Ever since it took me, I don't know, basically forever to try to get you to put the infinite mana combo in your cube. And that's because I have a fetish for bounce lands, and what do you want with bounce lands? You want Cloud of Fairies and Peregrine Drake, and if you're doing that, you might as well play Mnemonic Wall and Ghostly Flicker so you can make infinite mana. I've been trying to get him to do that for literally probably years. Suck it. Alright.
And he finally did.
And ever since he did, I don't know if one single solitary draft has gone by without me trying to just force that right into my deck. In any capacity, really. Yeah. Just get it in. I don't care how it fits.
And I resisted bringing it in for a long time because I've been trying to cut down on the number of recursive effects. Because, like I said in the beginning, that when you have this flat power level, that recursive effects are very warping to the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't have the very limited number of answers to them, you can start to get, you start to have matches where they become essentially unwinnable. And so that's why I've been very careful to, with equipment, like Warhammer specifically, is there's a lot of artifact destruction here. But if you don't have it...
He's been careful about equipment, he says, as Loxodon Warhammer and Skullclamp are both featured prominently.
I recently added Skullclamp. But those recursive effects are very dangerous. And so I didn't add combos for a very long time because of that. Yeah. I took out Capsize, those style effects. But this effect alone is pretty reasonable. It takes some effort. It's... you're gonna have to generate. You need four separate cards essentially to allow the do infinite mana, and then if you wanted to try and do,
and then you have to do something with your infinite mana.
It's an interesting. So we've added that one, and then we've also added the Moirapod style of combo where you use Ivy Lane Denizen, which puts a +1/+1 counter whenever on a green creature. With Kitchen Finks, and then any one of the infinite sacrifice outlets. So the Kitchen Finks will allow you to gain infinite life, and then depending on your sacrifice outlet, you can generate infinite mana with Ashlyn's Altar, you could generate infinite damage with Goblin Bombardment, you could generate, you can make an arbitrarily large Carrion Feeder.
Right. And of course, like, this is one of those combos in that same space where you're like, well, how are those cards by themselves when not paired with, like, when you're not actually assembling the combo, right? Because you're talking about three cards that really don't have a lot of replacements. There aren't any other Ivy Lane Essence. There aren't any other Kitchen Finks. So you have to have both of those cards at least.
Yeah. Well, there's Airy Oofs, which is the only green persist creature.
Yes. You could also, I talked about doing Safehold Elite, too. Safehold Elite's another one that combos up with Ivy Lane Essence.
Yes. True.
We talked about that when we put...
But then you're dependent on whatever infinite...
Yeah,
part of your sacrifice that way,
right? Because there's no coming to play with that.
Yeah, you don't gain infinite life, which is a functional victory. Though, as Josh found out, your deck can get very thin in this format.
I was playing the pseudo mirror match against our friend Chris, who fought me for a lot of the blue black control cards throughout the draft, and ended up with Mr. Bones and Skull Clamp, and he drew at least 20 cards in our match, and he was down to 3 cards left in his library. And, like, 5 life or something, and I ended up getting to cycle my Slice and Dice to kill his dude, so I could just kill him with all my zombies from Rise from the Tides. But I could have just waited 3 turns, because he wasn't going to kill me anytime soon, and he could have just died to his own skull.
I had a really fun, I think maybe a few times ago, the last time I drafted Ryan's Cube, I had a really sweet 4-color control midrange whatever deck, and I think I might have even been playing it to you, Ryan. And I wound up milling myself to death in our first game. Like, I was just, you know, hardcore trying to get through cards to play threats. And I had stumbled on mana early in the game and made it to my discard stuff a couple times.
That's because I actually sideboarded correctly. I Nihil Spellbombed half your deck.
And then I won the match based on, like, some really small number of cards left in my deck before I finally assembled the infinite combo and killed him. It was like, ah, you know, I've got two cards maybe left in my deck, and I'm, you know, risking dying to a bunch of different stuff. And I'm just like, ah, finally got there. All right, you're dead.
So, yeah, we'll see as blue-green evolves, but I think that
there's a pun in there.
Yes, indeed.
You know, I'm just going to say, I'm really hurt that you are not showing the appropriate amount of love for Horizon Chimera, because...
I think it's still in there. I don't think I cut it.
Yeah, it's still okay. In there.
Well, still.
I just drafted it in a draft sim today, because I did a couple...
Because that card's the nut.
Before we were recording.
Yeah, no, I'm not opposed to going away from it, but usually the blue-green flash cards will now be splashed within a blue-red tempo deck, or...
Uh-huh. Well, I think the blue-green archetype can fit into that teamer style, where instead of, you know, these elegant tempo cards or whatever, you're just like, I have a flyer and it's got a Rancor on it. Die! I mean, very much the Assault Zeppelid.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
Yes, you can certainly play into that space.
Yep.
So blue-green has been a little bit of a challenge. Let's see, that,
Black-green. Let's go, my favorite color combo.
Black-red. Rakdos is a little bit of an interesting one. Rakdos is, I thought about this on the drive over here, that Rakdos is more of an attrition style in this really one. It is traditionally a very aggressive color pair. Your Spike Jesters and Goblin Guides and those style cards. And this one, Black Red is the home of all of the land destruction: Sinkhole, Molten Rain, Avalanche Rising.
My favorite.
That you have a lot, and that previously was home to a lot of the very punishing discard: Wrench Mind, Hymn to Torak, all of the discard spells, and so that you could play this this Jund style of game,
where resource denial.
You could deny them resources. You could play a lot of you know, just powerful creatures that are on rate, that, you know, all the Necrotals, all of your Flame Tongue Kabus.
It's called being a dick.
And then you have the bigger black and red cards that do your Havoc Demons, your Phyrexian Gargantuas, those style of cards that allow you to play this very Jund style of game. And you can splash green if you wanted to, but the black red core.
Yeah, it can do it on its own.
I really love the way that you can describe entire archetypes as Jund, even when they're not the same color. Like, I've definitely described my Grixis decks before as just being Jund. You're just like, this is my sweet Grixis Jund deck.
Yeah, or a lot of Abzan decks, you can just say are very Jund.
Yeah, you're like, this is a very Jund deck.
Well, people understand what that is. It's all value all the time, like the best rate on all of your cards.
Right.
You know.
Well, and you're just Rakdos killing everything. Usually has a lot killing of everything.
Sweet removal spells, like Terminate is a Rakdos card, and...
Bituminous Blast.
Yeah. You have all these. You could get your really traditional Jund experience with, you know, Bid Blast or Bid Pass into
Lightning,
into Bloodbraid Elf, into Lightning. You can live the dream. I've had it happen.
And all you're missing is Tarmogoyf.
At that point, all you're missing is Living End.
So that's a fairly traditional archetype. I don't usually see that one existing on its own. I've played it a couple times and it's fine, but it usually ends up in one of these three or four color decks.
Grixis, Jund,
that are leveraging bounce lines to get them to the end game quicker than anyone else.
Sure.
We'll go to black green now. Black green is another more mid range. This is the most attrition-oriented of all of them, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you look at the... Do you know off the top of your head what all the black-green multicolored cards are? Because if I remember which ones they are...
It is Necrogenesis, Golgari Germination...
Baloth Null, right?
Baloth Null Drifter.
Null Drifter.
Let's see.
Yeah, that's like the six mana.
I took out Putrefy.
Putrefy.
I added Winding Constrictor. I removed Putrefy for Winding Constrictor.
Winding Constrictor's a dope ad.
What am I missing? Catacomb Sifter.
Yep.
And Golgari Charm.
Yeah.
So
Germination and Necrogenesis, two of my all-time favorite cards in all of
Magic. And if they're both in the same time in the draft at the same time, will end up in the same deck. And you usually in this person who's sacrificing Mr. Bones, like. Yeah, getting a 1/1, recurring it, like ping you with Blood Artist. That's the very
that's like the bread and butter of that deck.
Right.
Yeah.
Mr. Bones is reassembling skeletons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was calling him Dr. Bones. I was like, Dr. Bones, Dr. Bones. The whole draft.
I absolutely love Baloth, Null, and Catacomb Sifter. And I find myself drafting Abzan decks a lot because I have a real fetish for Palakka Worm and Unburial Rites. That's my favorite in the whole world.
You get
so if I was for some reason in three colors instead of four colors, they're probably Abzan. Man, these black-green cards are so good. Yeah. They're just, there's so many cards in one card. They're so,
they do a lot of things.
Yeah, the core of this deck, reoccurring, that you're using, you're being a slow blink deck, that you're using the reanimation spells and the regrowth style of effects to
just generate advantage.
Instead of telling a person, I'm going to try to blink my creature and hope you don't have a removal spell for it, instead you're just saying, yeah, use your removal spell, idiot, good luck. All
right,
now it's coming back. And you can't possibly win, you're dead.
So yeah, which is hence the addition of Nihil Spellbomb.
And I actually really like the add of Winding Constrictor. One of my biggest grievances with the Modern Cube that was posted on Magic Online for the last couple weeks was that they had Winding Constrictor, but there weren't too many different plus one counters payoffs. There were a few that were good, but like there was no Walking Ballista in that cube, which was really weird for me because Walking Ballista has been very popular in Modern lately. And also there was no Hardened Scales in that cube. So as kick-ass as I think Winding Constrictor is, I just think if you're gonna go with it, why not just full whole hog and Hardened Scales? So that was actually one of my bigger grievances with the Modern Cube, and I really like the fact that it's wound its way into,
your
God cube damn it.
Yeah.
So, what,
chase me down that rabbit hole, so Alec.
We'll finish out the last color pair that we have is Gruul. So red green is a lot of what you expect from this cube. There's more tokens that you certainly there are no Curd Apes that there are green aggressive cards. Your Strangleroot Geist, Gnarlwood Dryad,
Ivyleen Denizen,
Voltaic Brawler.
Yeah, those style of cards certainly exist. But you can also go. You can play your Dragon Fodders and your Bestial Menaces into Overruns.
Orcish Lumberjack!
Yeah,
oh, also Lumberjack.
Also the mythical turn 2 Channel Fireball win exists now with the addition of Orcish Lumberjack.
God, that card's so good. Oh my god. Lumberjack has to be the card that hasn't seen enough play because people haven't gotten fucked enough by it yet.
Yeah, well,
people just need to catch some Orcish Lumberjack.
I've tried to convince Alec to put Orcish Lumberjack into his Prosh EDH deck.
It's like, it's so
sweet,
powerful. I mean, it's one of those cards that people are gonna lose to and just wonder what the fuck happened.
Yeah,
they're gonna get 5 dropped on turn 2 in a common uncommon cube. Play my bounce land, move my discard step, discard Unburial Rites. I'm doing such powerful things over here, and they're like, fucking Bestial Menace on turn 2. Or whatever goddamn horrible thing you're gonna do to someone.
you could ride the Raging Storm on turn 2, which is probably unbeatable.
I mean, it's a really messed up card.
So yeah, the Gruul plays in a very traditional space. It's generally an aggressive color pair, but somewhat more mid-range in that space.
Very versatile. It feels very versatile.
The artifact section, the common and uncommon creatures tend to be somewhat poor. I've considered using some of the modular creatures to try and push the +1/+1 archetype a little bit more. But the power level in the colorless artifacts is strong enough that I feel like that's not really worth doing over the power level of, you know, very powerful equipment like Bone Splitters, Skull Clamp, Blackstone Warhammer, those style of cards. Your all of your powerful colorless mana acceleration, Thrain Dynamo, Hedron Archive,
Signets?
No Signets.
Dreamstone Hedron?
God damn it.
No Signets. Signets is... That's certainly... If you wanted to cite the area that I have cut power level for archetype, like, definition...
Yeah.
That's certainly the biggest one. And you guys certainly talked about, you know, the effects that Signets have on your draft. And they're really amplified in this format as well.
I was going to say, it feels like they would warp it even more than they do in a Legacy Cube.
The speed... the whole extra turn that the Signets increase the general clock on most people. I didn't feel like it was worth it. I felt it diluted green, as you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So I only play 40 artifacts in general. So giving up a quarter of my artifacts.
Oh, well, that also makes sense. That's 10 of them, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. I was gonna say, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and the fixing, like you said at the very beginning, you wanted this to be very focused on two color pairs, you know, and you have to work for that third or fourth color. And handing people signets is just like, I mean, right. Well, now you can do whatever you want, you know, especially alongside things like the Trilands and Vivid Lands.
I think the modular push is interesting, along with some of the cards they've printed recently, namely Winding Constrictor and Walking Ballista.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly think there's room to explore. Right, I was getting there. I certainly think there's like some space to explore in Cube in general, modular creatures and the hardened scales, Winding Constrictors that go along with them. Based on a lot of the concept Tarkir stuff that has come out in the last couple of years, and as recently as last set with Aether Revolt. I think there's a lot of space there to explore, but I actually think for your cube, a bunch of the better modular payoffs are rares, so you kind of miss out pretty hard on not having them.
Yeah, no, not having a Ravager.
Hangerback Walker, Walking Ballista. There's the one guy who you pop a 1/1 counter off of to like put an artifact from your graveyard on top of your deck.
Arcbound Reclaimer.
Reclaimer is super powerful.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite.
That's a big
one. Yeah, no, Triskelion.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And that Vintage Superstar.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then we've obviously had, with Kaladesh Block, we've had the vehicles. And so I initially was so interested in seeing how the vehicles would play, I put all of them in. I played every single one.
Even the bad ones.
Up to Demolition Stomper and all. I put all of them in.
Cool.
That's
too many.
I wanted to see what happened, and to see that in a format that has naturalized effects. We certainly have, you have Disenchant, you have all of the, we have True Disenchant, we have Land and Relic Warder, we have
Fragmentize, Nature's Way,
Conclave Naturalist, Reclamation Sage.
They're just everywhere.
Manic Vandal. Yeah, they're exist because they're very powerful artifacts in this cube. How does that play? And they're somewhat oppressive to those kind of style of cards. That they are, in many cases, you know, you're going to take a turn off to play this card, and that if you don't have, if that gets killed in that window, you know, it's already a 2-for-1 when you play a Manic Vandal or a Reclamation Sage.
Right.
And then you get the Time Lock.
Yeah.
You can start to put decks very far behind. So I think we've just let a few in. Consulate Dreadnought is an interesting one. Maybe we could
circle back to that card, one. That card gives me wood.
That being the...
If you hear a clang on the bottom of the glass table, that's my penis. 100%.
The you know, becoming this abyss style of card in the endgame where you turn all of your 1/1s that can't attack into this 7/11.
I really want to play that card. I haven't gotten a chance to draft your cube too many times since I've been on this job at work, and since that card's been added, but it's been something I've been so interested in doing. To me, what it really feels like, it's like Quest of the Dreadnought. You open it in your opening hand, you play it on 1 mana, and then your game plan can just be like, how am I going to get this fucking thing on? Like, what is happening? What do I need to do? What kind of trades need to happen here to make that work? Oh, that card's sweet.
It'll be interesting. We left, and then the other one, Untethered Express, is one of the most powerful.
Here comes the pain train.
Renegade Freighter as well, and then I've left
the second car on the pain train.
The fuck truck.
Yeah. And then I've left Fomat Bizarre Barge as another way of playing with the blank deck and other things.
Yeah, that card's sweet. Okay. Yeah. That card's super fun.
So, and
which
then
which one is that? Is that the one that draws?
It draws a card. It's a 5/5.
5/5 draws a card.
Creature. Yeah.
And then we do have some of I have 26 true artifacts in there, and then we have a lot of colorless cards that a lot of your reanimation targets here, Artisan of Kozlik, Ulamog's Crusher, Breaker of Armies, Bane of Balaged, are your targets for channel, as well as your if you wanted to play the very traditional style of discard my fatty, reanimate. Animate dead or something on turn 2 or turn 3. Those why those exist, or the channel deck, or just the ramp deck. You can certainly ramp to them.
Sure.
And then some of the more interesting ones. I have Signal Pass to support the various tokens archetype. Milliken is a kind of colorless accelerator that also somewhat supports the graveyard decks and other things. We have some of the value creatures, Filigree Familiar, Pilgrim's Eye, Clockwork Librarian is I've enjoyed some of the Draft Matters cards. There are a few sprinkled in here.
I noticed that.
What are the other ones?
Garbage Fire.
I have Garbage Fire. I have Pyretic Hunter.
That card fucks so many people.
Yeah, the 5-mana 14/14 menace. Is
That card is good, so sweet.
You know, the first time I ever had that card played against me, it was in the rotisserie draft that I was talking about. Creighton had like a 19/19 Pyretic Hunter.
Yeah, we agreed that it was arbitrarily large.
Absolutely ridiculous. And we're playing this really tight match. He plays that on turn 5. All right, you know, I'll figure this out. All right, I leave up like a counterspell, leave back a blocker so that it can't kill me. I'm like, you know, because if he goes to remove my blocker, I'll counter it. All right, I'm feeling good. Slam in with a couple of my dorky tokens, pass the turn. He's like, all right, attack with Pyretic Hunter. I'm like, cool, block. He's like, it's got menace. Oh, I'm fucking dead. Good work! Oh, didn't read that whole card. I thought I knew what it did. Oh,
Pyretic Hunter doing God's work.
So, yeah.
Sometimes I just need killed.
And then we have... So the cube is set up in that there are 60 cards in each monocolored section. There's 60 multicolored cards, which is a lot. I play a full 6 in each.
I was going to say, that's pretty big, even for 450.
And I love it.
No, I'm not saying it's wrong. That is entirely, like, you know, we talk about very specific cubes on this cast a lot, but, like, in the space of designing your own cube, like, how many gold cards you want is...
The more, the
better.
Gold cards are superior to monochromatic ones.
Yeah, there's this weird stigma. Like, if you go on, like, the Salvation forums and stuff, like, most cubes that I look at, everybody, like...
3 to 4.
Yeah, 3 to 4. At, like, 360, sometimes people are all the way down to, like, 2. You know, and
then
they're
like, I don't touch any triple-colored cards. I don't touch any, like, sharded cards.
Yeah, well, they only have, like...
Well, congratulations, dickbag. You're missing out on some of the best cards.
Right, they only have, like, 40 cards in their gold section, and 2 of each of those in each color pair is a Signet and a Manland, right? Like, it's crazy to me, and... Because gold cards are so...
Is a gold card.
Yeah, and that, like, there is, like, you know, the argument, the, like, gold cards, you know, they cost you more in the draft to, like, make work, or you have to build around them or whatever, but there's so many sweet cards with, like, the reason they're gold is they provide such a more powerful effect than your monocolored cards, right. You know, and I think it's a shame that cubes don't run more gold cards, so, like, it's nice to see in a cube this size that many gold cards in the gold section.
Well, and Wizards has certainly started in, you know, ever since perhaps Magic Origins, and maybe even sooner than that, that they've used gold uncommons as signal posts. This
right.
is what this archetype
yeah.
does.
Yeah.
And they're
and
very
that,
good.
And that this is trying to implement, you know, to follow that, to that these cards define what these color pairs do, and that certainly Wizards hasn't been shy about giving them a very good rate as well, certainly.
Right.
Aether Bolt is some of the most powerful uncommons I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So then we go to the lands. I have 50 lands in the cube. So I have 60 monocolors, 60 in the multicolor section, 40 colorless cards, and then I have 50 lands. We talked about the cycles that we did already. We have the tri-lands, we have the bounce lands, we have the vivid lands. And then the other cycle that I run is the Mirage Depletion Lands.
Yeah, I noticed that in the draft. I was like, what? What is this? I had to read the first one I saw. I was like, what the hell does this do?
Are those goofy fetch lands or whatever?
No, they're they come in tapped. There's one for each monocolor, and they come in tapped, and then you can tap, and they enter with 2 depletion counters on it, and you can tap it, remove a depletion counter, and you add 2 mana of whatever color it generates. So, you know, the green one gives you double green. But then once both counters are off, you have to sacrifice it.
Oh. Yeah, they're really bad. I don't know why you like them so much. And I've been trying to get you to take it out forever. I don't see the point. I don't like them. So
I find them that the a lot of the power of traditional cubes resides in the lands. That the power of being able to take a card in the draft, and then not having it apply to your 22 or 23, that you get to play even more of your picks.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I tried, I went you know, pretty exhaustively through almost all the commons on uncommon lands, and that these have these functionally add as an accelerant that you're gonna oftentimes in this cube you're gonna take turn one off, and so you can take turn one off, and then you get this. You get an extra mana on turn three, or you know, you basically skip ahead to turn three and turn four,
mm-hmm.
And then you're obviously gonna have to come back down. But the extra, and certainly in more aggressive decks, that ability to skip a whole turn, to be able to play a one drop and a two drop, or usually like a two drop and a removal spell,
mm-hmm.
That is really powerful. To get That's, here,
those. The best part about the Common Cube experience is if you ever want to dig down and just play some real magic, you know? The grievances that our group, at least, always has with Josh's cube and just playing cube in general, we've noted the other day, people have been getting so salty, like so down with cube drafting lately, just like because they get so upset when they lose, because the games feel miserable when you're losing. I watched you and Josh play his cube last week. And Josh only cast two spells, or like maybe four spells across your guys' match. Granted, those were mana problems. That can happen in any cube. But yeah,
I mean, you watched me draw eight straight lands?
Yeah, happen in any cube.
Yeah,
but,
that's just magic
but, like,
in general. That's,
you know, the round before, he played against Jim and maybe only cast four spells because he just conceded because there was no game to be had there. It was Jim's deck was just far superior because Jim's the greatest player in the world and crushed Josh to death. And the games are not even close. I watched our friend Alfredo play more turn one mana vaults because I'm convinced he hides that card in his sleeve. and the games where you lose are so not fun. They feel like non-games almost. You're just like, oh, I fucking got murdered. Like, on turn two. Nothing after turn two ever mattered. Even if the game went longer. Like, I was just obviously dead. And if you ever want to get into the nitty-gritty of really getting some quality magic out, I think common uncommon cubing is such a sick way to do that because almost all the games always feel very interactive. There's some gameplay. If you stumble a little bit, you have some time to recover.
Yep.
You know, you're not just immediately dead to whatever your opponent did. You have that replay. And to me, that feels great. And the play patterns you're describing with these depletion lands are the opposite of anything you want to be doing because they lead to more explosive draws out of the decks if they wind up working out that way, right? If you have it on turn one, you can use it to jump yourself ahead a little bit and get off to a more oppressive start so that you give your opponent fewer ways to get back in the game very, very early. But then you lose that land, and it means if your opponent put up any kind of resistance, you're now way on the back foot when it comes to them taking control of the game over and stopping you. So when you run those things out on turn one, you're either looking at a game that is going to end very, very quickly when your opponent's not going to have much of a chance to do anything, or a game where they're just going to put up like some minimal amount of resistance, wait until you don't have any more lands in play because you're an idiot, and then crush you to death when you're going to feel like there's nothing you could have done because there's no way you can possibly draw enough lands and enough spells to cast off of said lands to do anything meaningfully.
I just love to see someone try to play two of those fucking lands and catch a sinkhole. Like, oh, now your game is done.
Just to me, those play patterns don't seem like healthy in most situations that I can imagine. And I feel like they're directly detracting from the play experience you'd get without
them. That you enjoy.
Yeah, that I enjoy. I mean, yeah. I was also talking about how great Orcish Lumberjack is, and that's basically definitionally the same. So.
Well, and for the most part, Mason likes needless complexity to make games take way too long.
Look, you if know, you want to look at a good cycle of lands, okay, the perfect cycle of lands, bounce lands, are the pinnacle of magic, alright?
So,
and I've definitely got my bounce lands sinkhole. It sucks, and I don't find myself losing those games that often. Sometimes you get put behind, you get buried. But that's only when your opponent puts on an insane amount of pressure and blows up your lands with, like, acidic slimes or something, and then does it multiple times.
Four out of the six bounce lands I played in my match against Chris over three games got strip mined.
Yeah, just immediately, right? But, but you won that match.
Yeah,
and that's,
I did.
At its root, there was a long time, actually, that I advocated about, like, just playing as many bounce lands as you could possibly fit in your deck. All the time,
yeah.
Just off-color ones, I don't care, get them in. Every time you see them, draft them, and then just play them in your decks. And there was, like, a lot of ins and outs over the years that Ryan's been like, yeah, fuck your bounce lands. Like, fuck those bounce lands.
Yeah,
he's like, all right,
we started with, like, okay, we went up to, like, Molten Rain and Avalanche Riders. And then we had to amp it up. We went to Dwarven Blast Miner.
Yeah. Have you ever he, like, cockily smirked and slammed it into play against me on turn two once. And just like, what is this? What are you doing to me? He's like, in the main deck too, motherfucker. All right, bring it on.
Yep, tap. That's one great. One in the red for a 1/1. Mm-hmm. Pay a red, tap it, destroy target numbers.
Oh, what a mana for my own heart.
But the most beautiful part about losing a bounce land to a destroy land effect is that you're losing tempo, but you're not losing it on cards.
Right.
Typically, you have a lower land count in your deck anyway when you have these bounce lands in. I mean, you can very easily play
18, and I had 4 bounce lands in my deck.
That's too many. You shouldn't have played that many.
Jesus Christ, Josh.
I was the control deck, and I wanted to be able to cast Rise from the Tides with multiple other lands up. And
but
like,
you didn't need to do that. Maybe, okay, it worked out for you. That's great.
It was fantastic.
To me,
I also had things like Thirst for Knowledge and like all this stuff that like I had like a lot of card filter. You know,
sure. So, I mean, I typically play 17 even if I have a bunch of bounce lands, but that's because I typically don't find myself losing when I have a bunch of lands in my hand. I find myself losing when I don't have enough.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to like hedge a little bit, and
three bounce lands.
I'm totally willing to enter the middle part of a game with 4 lands in my hand and 2 spells. Yeah. I'm like, I've played a couple spells, I've played a few lands, and now we're like getting into the nitty gritty 4 and 5 mana plays, and I only have like one thing to do. That's all right. That's fine. I have so many lands. How could I possibly lose? I want to hit all my land drops until turn 11 anyway, so it's totally fine.
Jesus.
But bounce lands lead to great, great games of Magic. You don't get mana screwed as often, because if you have a bounce land and a land in your hand, you have plays for the first 3 turns of the game.
It's like starting your hand with 8 cards.
Yeah, it's insane.
It leads to mana screwed fewer times every single game.
It leads to mana fixing, so you don't get screwed in that way as often.
Mm-hmm.
It slows the game down a little bit, so you don't get to feel like you didn't play Magic. I mean, bounce lands are truly the pinnacle of good Magic being played, and the depletion lands are the opposite of that. Therefore, they're garbage.
Well, I think that the depletion lands do for aggressive decks, especially aggressive decks that are very color-intensive, white and black, and blue to some extent, too, honestly, that allows you to play through that, gives you some acceleration without the cost of putting a mana dork or a ritual in your deck.
Sure.
And so it's they're not
skull
great.
Skull clamp and locks on a warhammer. I don't think it costs you anything to play mana dorks.
Yeah. So but like so we have the other cycle. I've played all but Blighted Gorge, but the Blighted cycle is something I thought has been a very good addition to the cube.
They've been great.
Oh, I love
really,
that.
Really,
I actually drafted a Blighted Fen in my Grixis deck that was the splashing green, just because I wanted to be able to like sack or to fetch up more lands to get to the late game faster.
Blighted Woodland.
Yeah, or Blighted Woodland. Yeah. And I ended up not playing it. It was in my sideboard, but like I heavily considered it off of my only other 2 green lands, just to be able to have that in my deck. So.
And then we have
Woodland's great.
We have a few. The main land cycle is not very well balanced. We have I've kept Treetop Village, and the Fairy Conclave are far superior to the
white 1/4
spawning pit, isolated watchtower.
The white space for that land cycle is like really tough. Red, you at least get Barbarian Ring, which I have written down on my arm. Didn't remember to say it, but Barbarian Ring would be great.
Isn't Barbarian Ring a rare?
No, it's been uncommon.
You tattooed yourself.
I didn't have
show notes.
I didn't have paper in front of me, so I was just writing. I got this new pen too, so I've just been writing on my arm. Just take a picture of that.
By the end of this.
High school. Jesus.
But no, I mean Red actually has some good options. It's got Gitu Encampment, which is fine.
Had it in for a while, and I've removed it because it just generally didn't get played.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's a come to play tap lane and an aggressive thing ish.
Yeah. But
it's also
all of your fixing.
Honestly, it's probably just not even
anyways,
an aggressive card
like,
because it's a 2/1 first striker, which is probably just great on D.
Yeah.
But Barbarian Ring is a quality card that I think you know.
I have Kelvin Megalus because I don't believe bought Barbarian Ring is a rare.
I mean, I would trust you on that.
I'm pretty sure it's not because Cabal Pit isn't, and that's
Cabal Pit's a really good one.
Oh, Pit's sweet.
Yeah, yeah, and that's from the same rotation as all of those.
Yeah, Cabal Pit's so very, very good.
You had Cabal Pit, you had Barbarian Ring.
I play Cabal Pit in EDH.
I think Cephalid Colosseum is part of that too.
Yeah.
The threshold lands or whatever, those are dope.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember what the green and the white ones do. But I remember Cephalid Colosseum, Barbarian Ring, and Cabal Pit are all dope.
Yep, they are all dope.
Vintage fucking white, Dredge.
White really doesn't have a great one to explore in that space. I think the last time I drafted your cube, you had that garbage.
Darrow Encampment, the weep has been removed.
And it just literally made me want to blow my brain.
Darrow Encampment is the strip mine. Now.
With 38 cents inside of a shotgun.
So, maybe. And then, the remaining lands, we have Strip Mine, Ghost Quarter, Wasteland. To pressure some of the other fixing that I'm going to pressure. The goal was to put, you're going to put pressure on you to find enough of it, and that aggressive two color decks are going to have ways
now,
to
now. I kind of don't like, Ghost Quarter is good in a lot of things, but I don't think Cube is one of them. I don't think, because typically everyone's going to have a bunch of basics in their deck, right? True. Outside of the super extreme situation where you have someone drafting four or five color, and they prioritize their land fixing really, really hard, and they don't have too many Kadama's Reaches or Cultivates or what have you, so that they're playing a bunch of basics in their deck. I mean, Ghost Quartering someone to take out their mana fixing is pretty loose. They're almost never going to have a splash color where they're not playing basics of that color. So
yeah,
it's really tough. Have you just thought about playing something like Tectonic Edge or the other one, Encroaching Waste?
I've played Tech Edge. Tech Edge is just... is somewhat challenging to, it doesn't generally do what you want it to do, because like the best case scenario is that you're able to Ghost Quarter that turn two bounce land and give yourself a two turns to get very far ahead, and also to deal with the man lands, to deal with some of these other value lands that sometimes that you an aggro deck cannot beat a Blighted Step. It's gonna gain 12 or 15 life or whatever, that you have to have, that the answers to these cards are very limited within the cube. Like, it's literally like Acidic Slime, Molten Rain, Sinkhole. There's a handful, a literal handful of cards that deal with those cards, and that you're going to need to,
Do you just have packs of Kaladesh sitting over there?
Yes.
What are you doing?
He wants to see what I'm going to show you. What a handful of
cards is. He said a literal handful of cards.
Oh, yes. Oh, okay.
There we go. Jesus Christ, Alec. What's wrong with you? Is this a disease? Should we be worried? My God.
Oh, this is the literal game. I see.
We do this every time.
I've fallen victim of wordplay.
Wait, let me see that handful of cards. Fuck you.
You're the shit out of me.
Anyways,
there are not many.
So,
So,
I agree with...
Cleaned this place, Mason. What the hell is wrong with you?
I'd do it again.
How dare you come into my house?
I agree with you on the Ghost Quarter. I think it's fine. I understand its reasons for it. I think it is more powerful, or has more uses in like a Legacy style cube where you're actually attacking like the man lands, like the Zendikar man lands and stuff like that, where there's a lot more lands that do things.
Yeah.
But I think it is totally fine here and completely justified. So.
Well, I also kind of have I think it's better in your style of cube. In a Legacy cube, because you have recursive effects with it. You have maybe a Crucible of Worlds or a Life from the Loam or something that's letting you rebuy it, so you can actually work people out of the basics that are in their deck. Mm-hmm. Definitely, you can do that in modern Legacy formats. You can do that in cubes sometimes, depending on the deck you're playing against. But in Common Uncommon cube, I feel like you have no recursion, you have no recursive effects, so you're never going to run someone out of basics with it. I mean, that's just never going to happen. So, the weakest Ghost Quarters are always the ones where they just search up a land and put it into play. Like, that doesn't feel great. So, alright. Using it to fix your own mana, probably the worst way to use a Ghost Quarter, but, like, probably the third most used way.
Ghost quartering my own lands when you have a Titania in play feels really awesome, though. Not in Common or Uncommon Cube, I'm just saying. Awesome. That can't happen, but, like, you know, in that general, it feels really great.
He probably put that in there for you, Mason. I'm going to draft all these bounce lands. I'm going to fucking ghost quarter you.
That's definitely totally plausible. I've had people in cube matches before make such a big deal about blowing up my bounce lands when I'm sitting there with like five other lands in hand and I'm like, yes. Do your thing, idiots. They're like, strip mine your thing on turn one, plus play a one drop, curve it into a strip mine to blow up your thing, and then the rest of their hand is garbage, and I'm just like, yes, you can't possibly win.
So I didn't get you with this, but my favorite wins in this cube is utilizing Black Vice.
Yes.
Where I managed to lock Creighton into... I repeatedly Flicker Whist his bounce land and killed him with Black Vice when he was stuck with eight cards in hand.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and preface this... it's not really a preface anymore, but I'll go ahead and make a blanket statement here that says... Bounce lands are dangerous and not for everyone. If you don't want to play on the edge of your seat, maybe you don't want to commit as hard as some of us to the art of the bounce land. Alec, I know, is a disciple of the bounce land at this point. He knows. But, you know, sometimes the games you lose when your opponent really punishes you for those bounce lands do not feel good. Okay? No one is saying that when your opponent Flicker Wisps your shit and then, like, Acidic Slimes you and plays a Mist Meadow Witch, you're gonna have a good, like, fun time. You just have to trust that over the long term, you're gonna be rewarded.
I wouldn't even be mad. I'd be like,
yeah.
You got fucking wrecked.
Good work.
That's savage.
So I think that's basic structure of a cube.
Okay.
And that kind of explained the philosophy, where these color pairs line up, some of the cards that lead you into them. We discussed a little bit about the most powerful cards. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit more about defining cards or very interesting cards.
I want to take a minute to talk about this Cherry Garcia. Good.
Episode 11 brought to you by Ben and Jerry's. Yeah. Hey-o.
That's our opportunity.
You know, I didn't realize we've called this one Episode 11 like a few times, so we can't like record it and then release it later. Now it has to be Episode 11.
It is. It's already labeled as such in the thing, so...
In your personal phone, so there's no way it could possibly be changed at this point. It's like, damn it. Ugh.
That part's getting edited out because our audience doesn't know that we record on a cell phone. So,
you know what? Quit hiding facts from the people, Josh. They need to know.
Russia? I got one for you.
Okay.
You need to make sure you add a link to the where Marshall Sutcliffe describes all of his
the audio equipment,
audio equipment, and that you're you have a magical. Table
of my glass amplifier.
Glass table of audio quality.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm just going to throw this one out there.
Even if, like, God forbid, you know, like, Abby and I split things off sometime in the future or whatever, I get this table. Because
it's important. It's not, like, well, that's actually, she'll be like, you know, that's actually my table and I want it. You'll be like, we really can't, though. Can't. It's important. So you're going to have to take, like,
survives the cat because of this table.
Yeah, it's, unfortunately, not
what
something
your ass
with.
Is moving out. She didn't break up with me. I'm staying here.
All right.
That sounds like a sitcom.
Ryan, you asked about specific cards. I have a question. Did you ban, because you talked about like keeping out things like Capsize and like these like combos that
which
kind
have been
of
in,
like linearize like the gameplay in the draft and things like that. Did you ban any specific cards on power level?
So the cards that I initially banned on power level, most of which have made their way in. Skullclamp.
Okay.
Warhammer.
Bizarre Library.
Channel. Those style of cards we did ban. You could certainly put a library in here. I tried to make sure that I could, if I wanted to use this in a sanctioned event, I could do it, and I don't currently own a library. I don't actually know how...
Most don't.
I mean... I could probably access the library.
Yeah.
But that I don't I don't that when I started I had these like these are too powerful and that we've we've gradually added them in, and I haven't found that they've made, you know, Chris do 20 cards off Skullclamp and still died.
Yeah, right, yeah. He just didn't do enough. And
That oftentimes these effects that draw card advantage in this cube is somewhat... Your card is not worth as much as other ones. That because, like I said, the power band is small. Mm-hmm. That I guess that's somewhat of a paradox almost. That you have, even though the power band is small, you would think a card is, they're even more equal. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel like that's the case. Like that, no, I've certainly outdrawn Mason, and mm-hmm. that because Mason has just acidic slimed my mana base into the ground. Or
yeah,
whatever.
I think a really important part of identifying how to win in common cubes, especially when you have a pretty flat power level, is figuring out what axis your opponent is fighting on and try to fight them on wherever they're weak. So if you're fighting against these powerful four color midrange decks that have like great mana and super powerful mid game, whatever you're playing, you have to try to figure out what you can do that's going to pressure them in a way that makes them uncomfortable. So whether you can pressure their mana base, or you can attack their life total very quickly. Sometimes you just know you have an unbeatable late game. So as great as they think whatever they're doing is, you know that you're going to hit that, you know, Rise from the Tides for 25 zombies and have four counterspells to back up. And they can't beat that, no matter how good they think their deck is going along. Congratulations, you played Diabolic Servitude, and you're like looping Palaka Worms and shit. You're so cool. Here's a Rise from the Tides, you're going to die. Like,
yeah.
I think when you have a little bit slower of a format and you have time to really, like, analyze and try to figure out, you know, what your opponent's deck can do, what your deck can do, you have plenty of opportunity to try to figure out where you can fight someone that you can win. Right. If you just try to fight someone where they're best all the time, you're going to lose, right? You can't always speed up and try to protect your life total against a mono red deck. Like, you can't always turtle up and play a defensive game against any of these aggressive decks, because they might evolve their game plan to just outcarding you with a skull clamp or some kind of recursive damage effect, and then suddenly you die even though you turtled up really well and didn't take too much combat damage. Sometimes you clog up the board to fight their creatures and they finish you off with 11 points of burn. Like, those things don't always work, so sometimes you need to reshift gears and think, like, okay, well, if my mono-red opponent's beating me down really effectively, what can I do? Where can I fight them that they're bad at? Well, none of their creatures can block, so I'm going to try to race them down with some big idiots that cost 2 and 3 mana, you know? You got to figure out where they're weak so that you can pressure them there. And in a lot of mid-range fights, that comes down to, like, figuring out the little things. Maybe you can pressure their mana when they're not expecting it. Or maybe you can just, you know, pump the brakes and leave up counterspells and they'll deck themselves. Like, anything can happen. It's just figuring out where those weaknesses are. It's a big deal.
Well, and that pushes the... that it's hard... It's certainly in a cube, you don't want to play a lot of truly sideboard cards. You don't play Pyroblast and those style cards. I have played a few of them, Relic of Progenitus, Nihil Spell Bomb, because there just doesn't exist the type of main deck thing like a Scavenging Ooze, an Anafenza,
Withered Wretch. Oh wait,
those style of effects don't really exist. Mm-hmm. And so that there are a couple of these, but that sideboarding is important in this cube, and that you can certainly there's certainly some absolute silver bullets. Against some, even, you know, the what we consider the best cards in the cube, your Warhammers. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I've mentioned a few times that I think I've mentioned it on the cast, but maybe just in live talks a little while. But I think sideboarding is like an often underrepresented skill in cube draft. That is, most people will just build their 40 card decks and then kind of slam it. I think certainly a lot of people during their cube drafts will build their initial 40, spend tons of time stressing over the exact build that they want, and will just put the rest of their cards to the side and never touch them again for the rest of the draft. Like, yeah. That happens all the time. Or they'll maybe know that they have one or two cards that really matter to them, and everything else is garbage. But very rarely does anyone take the time out to think, like, this is going to be important for my sideboard.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, personally, there is an episode of Limited Resources, I believe it is number 188, where Brian Wong talks about this extensively. He really goes into it, and it's really great. It was it's a game changer for me, at least, when I play Cube, that sideboard cards, and there's a lot of, they're very powerful sideboard cards, to, you know, there's, you're certainly there, you're very straightforward ones, your Reclamation series against any of these powerful artifacts that we talked about, your Nihil Spell Bombs or your Relic of Progenitus against these, a reanimator style of deck.
Your sweepers against the token strategies.
Sweepers, yeah. But there's also, you know, there's the, you can counter these aggressive decks, with life gain. You know, there's Grey Merchant of Asphodel, there's Blighted, Step.
Yeah, you can really throw off, you know, maybe this Wall of Omens just isn't synergistic quite in my white beatdown deck, but when I try to slow up a little bit against decks that are even more aggressive than mine, I can slide it back into the main, like, you know, work it out.
The ability to bring in, Goblin Trenches in the token deck that allows you to just go over the top of most of the control decks. You can just sit there and just make, like, okay, well, you're going to wrap me. Okay, I'm going to sack three lands.
Make six more goblins. Yeah. That's a perfect example of, like, you know, your opponent thinking the game is going to go out one way. Okay, I've got this powerful late game. All I need to do is survive. I'll clog up the board a little bit. I'll throw some wrath down. My opponent can't go late because they're the aggressive deck. And you know, put it on its head. You play your Goblin Trenches out. They're like, okay, well, fuck. Now suddenly my late game plan doesn't look nearly as good, and I can't just, like, wrath out and, you know, play some idiots and hold back his aggressive onslaught because suddenly I'm staring down, you know, an extra 10 creatures that I wasn't expecting.
Yep.
That's, like, a situation where your random aggressive deck can easily just overpower or go over the top of a mid-range deck, I mean, which is a tough thing to deal with if you're not prepared for it.
Yeah.
Or you can have, like, one Vampire Nighthawk in play and just fucking nix the whole thing. Like, ah, ha, ha, I'm at 20 and you have six goblins, but I have a single Nighthawk, so...
Thanks.
No!
Whoopsie.
I'm slowly coming into your camp. The Kitchen Finks is, like
the
one of the best creature cards in Cube.
Let me tell you, when you finally come full...
When you go full oof...
All right,
let me. It's Ophi.
I mean, just listen to Patrick Sullivan talk about it. He just scoops it up.
Yeah. Anytime, Kitchen Finks. Look,
we're done here.
I love the way he's so nonchalant about it too. He's like, listen, sometimes your opponent has Kitchen Finks in their deck. They play it on turn three, and that's, you know, a good game of Magic. All right, so move on to the next one. All right, there are things you can't expect in a modern tournament. Okay, like. Sometimes your opponent's just unbeatable. So we have to deal with it. Yeah, Patrick Sullivan's great. I love that guy.
Well, do we want to crack a pack and go over this? Talk about some picks.
I also have a bunch of cards that I wanted to pitch to you, just throwing it out there.
Right, we can do that at the end. The tablet that we're going to use to crack this pack is dying. So let's look at these cards. It's been about five weeks since it's been used.
So it's
important. And then no.
Oh, God. I'm literally just going to defend all of these cards.
How about you read them?
I was going to say, I'm going to read over each card that's in the pack. And you want to do it? It's your cue.
Certainly, I'll read. Yeah, and I might...
Well, I mean, you're going to include the picture of the pack with the...
Yes.
I will. Yes, absolutely.
So we have Ridge Scale Tusker, Slice and Dice, Gore Clan Rampager, Aetherize, Orzhov Basilica, the Orzhov Bounce Land, Relic of Progenitus, Ashes to Ashes, Gary, Grey Merchant of Asphodel, Mnemonic Wall, Curse of Predation, the Ooh. Green Curse.
Yeah, that card's great.
Sandstone Needle, which is the red version of the Mirage Depletion Lands. Thunderous Wrath, Kessig Forge Master, Filigree Familiar, and Frontier Bivouac, the Teemer
Tribe. My favorite.
I thought you said you were literally going to defend every card in this pack, and you booed that stupid land. Words mean things, Mason.
I'll defend it by saying I would personally pick it so no one else could have that shit tier card. All right. But I'll throw it out there and say my pick one, pack one out of this is not what you'd expect, but it would probably be Mnemonic Wall. That card is a delight.
I've seen you do some silly things in the Mnemonic
really,
Wall.
Really fun card.
Okay, so we have a vote for Mnemonic Wall. Let's just go around the table, Alec.
What do you think you would pick? See, I think a lot of people would think, knowing me, that I would pick the Bounce Land. But the beautiful thing is that not everyone feels the same way about Bounce Lands that I do. So I usually get them late. I get them like 5th and 6th and 7th pick. And I don't really need to prioritize them that hard. Because I can just take them whenever they get to me. It's kind of beautiful. Beautiful moment.
Yeah, I'm kind of in between Basilica and Ridgescale Tusker. Because Ridgescale Tusker is really stupid. You know, I've seen that card do some really dumb shit. And I don't know exactly what the concentration of mana dorks is in here, but...
It's fairly high.
Yeah,
I believe we have five?
Five, okay.
Lamoralf, Argaralf, Elvis Mystic, Absence Pilgrim, Elves of Deep Shadow.
No Tree Speaker?
Tree Speaker as well.
Yeah. Oh, man, so, yeah. Six of them.
Yeah, it's everything except birds, right? And Raffalos.
A large number of them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
And Boreal Druid, you uneducated...
No, nope, Boreal Druid's out. When I cut the Colorless Matters cards, I took Boreal Druid out.
So there's no Boreal Druid, so,
and,
you know.
Yeah, and you got Elves of Deep Shadow, so...
Yeah.
Yep, so I... Especially going into it knowing nothing other than Bounce Lands are kind of dope, I'd probably take the Ridgescale Tusker.
I actually saw a Facebook post, I think, earlier today, because that limited GP is going on right now, and they're like, has anyone ever cast a Tusker and not have their opponent immediately roll their eyes? Like, oh yeah, that card's pretty good, I guess. What about you, Josh? What do you think?
Well, I have this just like, oh god, it's dying. I love fixing, so like, I'm... My gut instinct is to take probably Basilica, but if it's not that,
if you're going to take a fixer, why wouldn't you take Frontier Bivouac? That card's amazing. Tri-lands are so good, because, like, even when they just wind up being two-color dual lands, like, that's totally Reese.
You just went on this giant tangent about Bounce Lands, and now you're trying to persuade me to not take the Bounce Land.
He would defend literally every card. So
first off,
there's
a huge argument for Orzhov Basilica, because it's a black one especially, which means if you're on the draw, you can use it as a discard out and do some cool stuff that way. So Orzhov Basilica is great. But you have to know you definitely want to be in black-white for Orzhov Basilica to be like
value. That's not true at all.
You could play it off-color, but at that point, it's not the most powerful card in the pack. If you're playing an Orzhov Basilica off color, it's
not ever,
the best.
I'm not going to give Alec the satisfaction. I actually rarely nowadays, after cubing as much as I have, pick the most powerful card in the pack.
Mm-hmm.
I pick what I just want to play, and usually I want to pick a lot of fixing very early to just let me play later in the draft the most powerful card that I see in every pack later.
Because then that's a really good thing.
So you can play these 3 and 4 color fucking monstrosities that sometimes work, sometimes don't.
Right. Now, that being said, my second pick that's very, very high is Curse of Predation. I think it's arguably one of the best anthems they've ever printed in all of Magic. Or Ashes to Ashes. See, this... I don't know, this pack's just...
Ashes to Ashes is probably my last pick out of this pack.
Really?
I think it's the... I think it's the...
It's not Sandstone Needle.
It's the 15th, and the 14th might be, like, Kessig Forgemaster. Like, I'm not even, like, really counting the Sandstone Needle. Like, I don't know. I would definitely pick
Rampage
that card
very good too.
If, you know, like, I was in the middle of drafting and my lung collapsed and I, like, you know, had a seizure and it found its way into my pack. But, like, other than that...
Throw it across the room. RL misclicks Sandstone Needle.
I would happily get a last pick Sandstone Needle. If it was completely out of my control and someone else literally forced me to have it in my pile, it would be there.
All right, Ryan, it's your cube. Where would you be?
Yeah. So, knowing where I've put archetypes, I'm with Josh. That Curse of Predation is where I when I open this pack.
Interesting.
That Curse of Predation is a very powerful. It's like I said, it's very powerful with any of the tokens. And green plays green. Green and white has tokens. Green and red has tokens. Green and black has tokens. Mm-hmm. That it plays very powerfully there. Green. It also plays into the +1/+1 counters. It's
right.
The best card in the +1/+1 counters archetype.
Yep.
And
it's splashable.
It's splashable. It doesn't commit. You know, green is maybe the most powerful color in the cube.
It is certainly up there.
And,
green is super powerful.
So, yeah, I'm very happy first picking a Curse of Predation.
See, I think for me, like, I would definitely pick this Mnemonic Wall just because that's, like, part of the combo that's near and dear to my heart. But depending on the day, man, like, this pack is so sweet. I know personally that I love playing with Slice and Dice. Slice and Dice is, like, my jam, man.
Yeah.
I will rock that guy. I won a match once where my opponent was locking me out with this stupid Capsize. It was my brother, and he's the worst anyway. But he is, like, just ruining me, capsizing my shit every turn. And he's got, like, count, like, forbid on buyback, like, locked. So I'm just can't possibly play anything that matters. And when I do, it gets capsized, and it's the worst thing ever. So he goes to, I play some shitty Sylvan Ranger or something. He goes to capsize it end of turn, and I cycle Slice and Dice to kill my own creature to counter his capsize. And he can't counter my Slice and Dice, and it's the greatest thing in the world, and I'm great, and he's terrible, and I draw a card for my trouble. That was...
Did you win?
I did. I did that to him, that exact thing. He went to capsize my thing, and I Slice and Dice to kill my own thing, so I did that to him 2 games in a row. To finally get out from under capsize.
He let you do it to him twice?
I mean, what was he going to do? Not cast capsize?
Well, I guess...
I mean, like, it was questionable, right? Because I thought he should have just been going after my lands every single turn, but he felt like at some point he needed to mop up some of the stuff that was on my board. So, like, anyway, questionable lines, but Slice and Dice, that card's great. It's also, like, a Wrath, like, a pretty reasonable Wrath.
Can be
super good, and I've the last cube draft I played in, I think I got murdered by like 3 different token decks in a row, so I'd probably just be like really in it, you know.
You take Slice and Dice.
Yeah, like the last time I played fucking Ryan over here, like charge across the Arabid with a million shitty 1/1s in play. Yeah. So I just, you know, get him with that Slice and Dice.
You haven't changed your name in the
No, I haven't. Honestly, but in the group chat, you don't see your own nickname, so I forgot it was there, to be honest.
Well, you're still trampled on the polluted deltas.
Yeah, yeah.
Am I still Father Christmas?
Nope.
Man, okay, I wish you were.
That one's been gone.
Gary is also, like, the sickest person, because if you know you want to do that, or you like doing that at all,
yeah.
Grey Merchant is the best card in that entire archetype. It's the Goblin Guide of Mono Black.
Yeah. That would be where I would win. Gary... Curse of Predation are probably where I would lean. That
if you're really unsure, Filigree Familiar is totally fine.
Oh yeah, I was gonna
Filigree Familiar
mention that. Like if I'm gonna pick a land to stay open first pick, like Filigree Familiar is a huge card. It's so good in the blink decks. It's great in the sacrifice like attrition and midrange decks.
It helped me a ton in my control deck that I drafted just yesterday. Absolutely.
Anytime I'm in any kind of like 3-4 color midrange deck, I always want to Filigree Familiar. That card's so good. It's like basically 2 or 3 cards in one.
Yeah.
You get to gain some life, which eats up like whatever shitty burn spell they're planning on flinging at their face. You're trading it off with a guy. You're brick walling a different creature.
Yeah. I never once got to block with it. I cast it and it died every time. They just killed it immediately.
God, way to go. And then, you know, obviously drawing that card afterwards, it functions in that same kind of space we talked about with Bowmap Bazaar Barge earlier. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've got that same that same replayability. So, I think we can all agree, Mnemonic Wall. Boom. Got there. I mean, pretty dope. The thing about Mnemonic Wall is it's such good value. Really. I mean, crack another pack here, and what else do we see? We got, oh my goodness, what is this? Train wreck.
Right. This one's a little bit
shit.
A little bit. This one's
wow.
There are some really sweet cards
in this pack, though.
I'll read off the choices this time. All right, so we have Rogue's Passage,
best card.
Sultai Emissary, Searing Spear, Wretched Griff, Dinrova Horror,
Chain of Mind. That's the best one.
Griffin Guide, Necromancy, Vivid Marsh, Foundry Inspector, Echoing Truth. Jade Mage, Hedron Archive, Air Servant, Mana Leak, and Urban Evolution.
I think I'm slamming Jade Mage here. That card is gas, and
Jade
it's
Mage
in the
is
best color.
Sweet.
It's a mana sink. I'm really big on mana sinks in this format, just because I know I'm going to be hitting a lot of land drops. I know I'm going to be trying to drag the game out super late, and Jade Mage, that guy is a great little 2-mana play when you need the removal spell. You need to just trade him off. And he's such a good mana sink. Such a powerful
effect. Alex?
Like, a lot of these cards are good, but nothing really I find particularly moving, except maybe the Jade Mage. And Necromancy always sits near and dear to my heart.
Right.
But I'd probably just take the Vivid Land here.
Really?
I'd be more than happy to just have that.
Sure.
Because, you know, like, Mana Leak is not at its best in these sort of cubes. It's still good. Like, that card's never really bad, but it's definitely not at its best here. And as much as I like Dinrova Horror, and I like doing that sort of thing, like, it's kind of a big doofy six drop, and I can find other cards to do that sort of thing. I think the Vivid March has the most, especially if we're first picking here, it's the most applicable the farthest across the spectrum. And I feel the least worst about having it if I find a more powerful off-color card. I don't have to ever abandon that Vivid March pick.
Sure. I actually was leaning towards Dinrova Horror. And that's
super powerful.
That's partially a little bit biased after the conversation that we had during the draft.
Because of how great that card is?
Well, just how underrated it was that draft format.
So
and
there's
like
the thing. It's actually not going to be underrated anymore because it was Modern Masters 2017, and after about the fifth or sixth time you get blown out by that card, you just stop underestimating it. That card's really fucked up. And
yeah.
Right now, it's getting picked a little bit more highly online, I've noticed, over the course of all my drafts. But still,
it's so good
sick.
In token decks. Because it is a true dude.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're down to one card in hand? Let me bounce your idiot token and make you discard the last card you had.
Yeah, and then my second pick was, I mean, I was leaning toward Jade Mage as well.
Yeah, Jade Mage is powerhouse.
Man. I love making dudes. I also love mana sinks. It's cheap. It does a lot of things that I like to be doing in my decks. So
right on.
I don't know, Ryan?
This is certainly a pack where you could, I'm kind of with Alec, playing it safe with the, Vivid March, that I don't like going into two colors. The Vivid March is probably the correct pick. I think I would be always slamming Dinrova Horror. I love Dinrova.
See, now, I think, actually, if you're talking about taking a Vivid Land to stay open, and I think that's great, because Vivid Marsh is one of my favorite lands in the cube. Maybe, 11th or 12th place, right in there somewhere. I think there's a huge argument if you want to stay open and take Rogue's Passage. That card is super underrated.
Well,
Very, very. Or
Hedron Archive.
I was going to say, Hedron Archive, if you really
allow
me
to go big.
Yeah.
Well, see, Hedron Archive, I would say, sounds great, because, but it does kind of slot you into that I'm going to try to go big space. Rogue's Passage you can play in your aggressive deck as a way to push through damage. You could also play it in your slow, bomby deck, where you know that the only creatures you really care about attacking with in the super late game are the ones you're going to be hammering people with, your easily chumped block 5/5s or something.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you slow the game down to a point where you need to end it at some point, you've got that Rogue's Passage here so that your opponent can't chump block it, they can't do anything with it. So I think Rogue's Passage is actually like really, really good in this pack, and I would be, depending on my mood, I could certainly see myself taking it in over most of the other cards. I mean, that card is super powerful.
Yeah.
So we're at, how long is this episode so far? It's ridiculous.
We're at about an hour 45.
Oh, we're going to have to break this up into two episodes for sure.
No.
No?
No.
Just leave it all as one?
No, the listeners have to suffer. They want to listen to the cast, they're in for the long
okay.
haul.
Okay, do we want to do another pack, or do we want to talk about some of the many cards that I've been thinking of as we record this episode? One more pack? You want to do one more pack?
Sure.
That's
we'll do one more.
One more pack.
All
right, here, I'll
you
read them off
this
a couple
time. Cards at the end for, closing notes. You all know, right. Like, let the listeners think on them.
Fair enough. Okay, here we go. We've got a Go for the Throat, a Wear and Tear, a Briar Pack Alpha, Abundant Maw, Rogue Refiner, Renegade Rallier, Daring Skyjack, Skymark Rock, Stitched Mangler, Elephant Guide, Cloud Goat Ranger, Jungle Shrine, Swords to Plowshares, Crumbling Necropolis, and Wall of Blossoms. I'll leave it open to Ryan for his first pick. What do you think? Ryan, the master of all things cube.
Man, so there are, you can certainly play it very safe, taking one of the removal spells. You could certainly,
no one's going to shame you for
being very happy yet opening a Go for the Throat or, the Plow and going with that. that I try to, I like to lean into archetypes that are very good. Cloudgut Ranger, certainly one of the best token cards you've ever made. Skymark Rock, though. Yeah. I think that if I'm inclined to lean into an archetype early, it's hard to beat Skymark Rock. Skymark Rock is one of the most punishing cards, playing from ahead in a blue-white mid-range deck backed up with counterspells, like, especially the free ones like Daze and Force. You can just bury someone with Skymark Rock. I think that the correct pick is probably Swords to Plowshares. But I think if I'm drafting this, and I would like to use the archetype-driven nature of this cube to my advantage, I'm taking Skymark Rock. I think it's one of the most powerful cards.
I think a lot of people who have done a lot of common cube drafting would just say you always slam Cloud Goat Ranger. And that's where I'm going to. When I had my cube originally, this was many years ago, my thoughts about things have changed a lot since then, and it's no longer the case. But my argument for everything was always you never pass Cloud Goat Ranger. Cloud Goat Ranger is the best card in the cube.
I remember you talking about that even like when I put it in my, like, I first built my Legacy cube. Mm-hmm. And it was like giant, you know, yep. And like you're like Cloud Goat Ranger's gotta
get
be the best.
Giant Cloud Goat Ranger?
Yeah. Well, and you were, oh my god. And you were, you know, you just said, oh, it's the best card. It's the best creature card in your cube.
Yep.
Just hands down. Like, yeah, I'm never going to pass this card.
Now I think it's Palaka Worm, but back then, I mean, and for many years,
yeah,
Cloud Goat Ranger's the man. That guy is thebomb.com. And I think it's really good in the current configuration that you have. So I would be slamming that guy. Alec, I know you just checked out the pack. What are you thinking over there?
Yeah, it would have been one of the white cards. It would have been Cloud Goat Ranger or Plowshare.
Yeah, right on, right on.
I'm with Ryan. Like, I think Skymark Rock is
the nut.
Is Swords is the safest pick. It's it's far and away the safest pick, and you will never get scoffed at for it. But Skymark Rock feels like the most powerful card in this pack, like by a wide margin to me.
Can I say I think there are some underrated cards in this pack? I think Renegade Rallyer is a little bit new, but I've been having a lot of success with it.
I love that card's design space. I think it's a really, really powerful card.
You can use the depletion lands.
Yep.
You can. That's pretty fucked up, actually. That's dope. if there were more cards,
you can proliferate them indefinitely with Skyship Plunderer, which is also a combo.
You can. I thought it was Hinterland. I thought it was Hinterland Bandit.
That's sick.
Is it
all
Skyship
right.
Plunderer? Yeah.
I like it.
I've actually done that with my Vivid Lands, but not with my Depletion Lands, because I never played Depletion Lands, but, you know, got there. I've also think I've done that with Aether Hub. But Briar Pack Alpha is a card that I think often gets underplayed. That card's so
I got blown out
good.
By that card.
It's so powerful,
by
man.
It surprised the shit out of someone with
it.
That
wins
card.
You
yep.
a combat and leaves you a 3/3 for 4 mana. Like, that's
yeah.
so much. You can also
yeah.
flash it down as a threat against any kind of control deck.
Yep.
I mean, very, very powerful card. Green cards with flash, man. They throw people off hard.
They really do. Yep.
So
well, there's only, what, like 5 of them?
Maybe. Yeva makes every single green card a flash card. So
yeah,
really.
You Yeva, you had the werewolf, you had this butthole.
Yeah, Wolf Your Avenger. Yeah.
Who is a wolf as well.
Speaking Horizon of green cards with flash, Mason wants to, like, throw out card ideas. And I had one, like, all day today that has just been on my mind that I really wanted to throw your way. It's you love getting cards from the Commander products. Did you consider,
probably.
Now I can't even remember the name of the card. It's the 4/5 with flash for 6 Grove Guardian, I think is its name, that gives all your dudes +2/+2, and he has flash, and, like, it's this, the cube subreddit, like, kind of blew up talking about, like, during spoiler season when that Commander product came out. I think it was from last year's, or maybe the year before. Yeah, Grove Guardian, I think is what it's called. No? It's not.
I know what you're talking about, though.
This
I thought
terrible.
That card
I've been thinking about it all day, and now I can't remember the name of the card.
Well, maybe but I'm not thinking of the same card as you, because I thought I was thinking of one that's, like, even more expensive, and I think it's a rare, so...
No, this one's an uncommon.
Interesting.
And it's 5 and a green, and it's a 4/5
just
flash
say,
that
I
gives
really,
your entire team +2/+2.
I really appreciate the way
and
that
reach,
Wizards
I think.
That Wizards throws in these arbitrary rarities for these
yeah.
mono products.
Yeah.
The rarities that actually don't matter.
Right.
Like, I remember when maybe the first round of Commander products came out, and someone was talking about how True Name Nemesis was so expensive, and it's, like, the most expensive rare. I was like, it doesn't matter that it's a rare. There are exactly the same number of them in circulation, whether it's a rare or a common.
Right.
So...
Yeah, was that right? Great Oak Guardian, my bad.
No, that one's certainly one I can consider. I've actually considered playing it in my... one of my commander decks, and yeah. It is a Splinter Twin combo card. You can make infinite of them because it untaps all of your creatures.
Oh, it untaps all your creatures.
That was the other thing. Yeah.
Does it give them reach +2/+2 and untap them?
I want to read this card out for the listeners. Great Oak Guardian. It's 5 and a green for a 4/5 flash with reach. When it enters, creatures target player controls get +2/+2 until the end of turn, and you untap them. So
that's dope. Yeah, so in fact. That card's sweet.
Giant Ambush Viper. Look, he's just gonna.
And I'm
eat
a fan
of
Ambush Viper anyway, so yeah. That's.
Yeah. One Anthems too, which is nice because that plays well with the various tokens. Yeah, no, we'll consider that one.
That definitely seems sweet. Yeah. I like it a lot. You know, the card that one of the most exciting rarity drops. So every once in a while, I have these moments where I think about things. And I realize that, unfortunately, they'll never come to fruition. So sometimes I'll be thinking about cards in combination, but then think that, oh, those cards will have never been played in the same format in conjunction with each other. And sometimes those beautiful, beautiful things get to come together in cube, and that's what really makes me happy. But I was thinking about how great one of the rarity drops from Modern Masters 2017 was. That was so exciting for me if I still had a common uncommon cube, but I know that it's not powerful enough to get featured in Josh's and that you'll never do it. But the card Arachnus Spinner got bumped from a rare to an uncommon.
It's very interesting.
And if you had Arachnus Spinner and more than one Arachnus Web, or you had like a similar thing to what we do with your cube where you draft Arachnus Spinner and you get some number of webs.
Yeah.
Like, I actually think the perfect would be to just kind of stick with the goofy four number. You draft one Arachnus Spinner and you get 3 Arachnus Webs.
Yeah.
When you draft it. That's so exciting to me because when Arachnus Spinner came out originally in M whatever, I was, like, a goofy kid, and I thought it was, like, the second coming of a fucking Primeval Titan. Like, I was so excited by it.
Yeah.
I thought it was legitimately insane in Constructed Magic, and I played it for so long, because being able to drop it and, like, immediately start webbing up all your opponent's shit. I don't remember what other spider was legal in that format, but I played another spider-type creature. I think it was Deadly Recluse. Yeah. I think I played Deadly Recluse in my Arachnus Spinner green control deck, so I could fuck people up with...
Yeah.
A bunch of webs.
A very small split second shameless self-promotion piece here. Mm-hmm. Spoilers, Arachnus Spinner and Arachnus Web are in the horror cube.
Oh, really? That's so dope.
So we can talk more about that
when we do that episode next. Fantastic. That excites me because now, just like I was saying, these things that I think of sometimes that'll never come to fruition could happen. It could happen. I'm so excited about it. All right.
So
that was one of the many cards that I was thinking about, but I guess I'll just... one more.
The green 6-drop heavy slot is very competitive.
Which is surprising at common and uncommon levels.
But Symbiotic Beast is maybe showing its age.
Yeah, sure. It is.
Yes. 6 mana, 4/4, get 4/1/1 when it dies.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's cute, it does some cool stuff, but maybe you want the giant oak guardian guy instead, you know?
Yeah, that guy
slam that
sweet.
Guy into play.
I don't know, I've been thinking about it all day. I thought it was a rare. Because it was considered for Legacy Cubes. Like, I started to say that the Reddit kind of blew up when we were doing spoiler season for that Commander product, and everybody's like... Because other than Primeval Titan, there's just not many good 6-drops for Legacy or Vintage-style Cubes in green, which is weird because there's so many that have been printed. And this one I thought was rare because, like, it was getting so much attention at maybe being the second-best 6-drop in green now. And... it's actually an uncommon. I was like, oh, man, I wonder if Ryan's ever even heard this card. This is so sweet. So.
What are you doing, Doofy? That's not for babies.
Last card I'll mention, like, some of these are really sweet, but the other card that I was just randomly thinking of at the very beginning of the podcast that we were talking about was Bramblewood Paragon.
Oh, I love Bramblewood Paragon.
The warrior +1/+1 counter lord.
Yes.
That if you look at a lot of the Abzan creatures from cons that have to do with +1/+1 counters, they're all warriors.
And everybody knows that cowards can't block warriors.
That's a fact. They cannot. So, that whole thing, just throwing it out there, I think that's pretty sweet, eh?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Throwing it out there, Bramblewood Paragon, I think, is actually a pretty sweet option.
Because there's, you're getting close to the point where there's enough random ancillary creatures that are elves that you could maybe also consider whether you'd like to push some of the elvish tribal synergies as well. I've restricted myself. I wanted to see how the zombies one goes, because I've just been really unhappy with black being this color that is just a color. It was all
like support.
It was a very support color that you had a very select number of cards that were like, oh, I want to be black for this card, Blood Artist, that style of effect. And then, like, oh, okay, I need, black has this effect, so I will go into it.
Right.
But you rarely had a reason. Gary, Grey Merchant of Asphodel, is one of those cards that, like, oh, okay, I want to go into black because this card. And so, we'll see. I've been a little reluctant to go to too many of those tribal archetypes because of the dangers that happen whenever you draft, whenever you put too many of those linear archetypes that you put the draft on rails.
Right.
Yeah.
And that we certainly don't want to feel like that it's zombies or nothing. And that I've tried to, there were enough zombies in the cube that there's certainly, I've added about 14 cards that are 14 to 15 cards like to allow that 14, yeah. to support that archetype, mostly in black, a little bit in blue, but a lot of those cards are good enough to play on their own. Stitch Drake, the Mangler,
Stitch Mangler,
yeah. Stitch Mangler. Those are some blue ones. Advanced Stitch Wing. I put those in there. Those play well into the blue flying
or blue tempo
yeah. style of deck anyway. But they support. You're gonna go into. Generally, going to go into blue to get Diagraph Captain.
Mm-hmm.
So we stretch the zombie support there to not really cleave out too much of black and leave you with kind of a color that doesn't do much else. But
it seems totally reasonable.
Yeah,
I think more than one tribe. Like, zombies is sweet, but when you're drafting a tribe, you're very much in that, like, okay, now I'm going to draft every single zombie that I see for the rest of the draft. You know?
Yeah.
Because hopefully I'm getting to a point where I get a critical mass of them and
well, and you don't want that Morwin effect where
so that's a slippery slope. It's dangerous to have like too many tribes.
Well, and zombies is one of the very elves might be the only other one where you can get a lord at uncommon.
Right.
That you have Imperius Perfect and other things.
There are, but I mean it depends. Well, lords in the strict +1/+1 sense, but
well, Kithkin, make Kithkin.
That there are other payoffs for.
Yeah, there are a lot like we have Zombie Trailblazer, which allows you to make to attack their mana to turn things into swamps, or to turn on Swamp Walk.
Right.
Is that an uncommon?
Yes. Yeah, it is.
It wasn't originally.
We were just talking about that card.
Plane Chase, I believe, is the.
When we
Plane Chase made it an uncommon.
When we talked about black,
because it brought Warchief down too,
from which is pretty funny.
So.
Contagion Clasp.
Contagion Clasp. The artifact section does have some areas that I think could be improved. So Contagion Clasp is the proliferator, correct?
Yes, it is the 2-drop that puts a -1/-1 counter on a creature when it comes into play, acts as a little removal spell, and then, for the rest of the game, you can pay 4 mana, tap it, proliferate, which is super sick.
Well, and it plays into your +1 counter scheme.
Yeah.
Plays into +1/+1 counter scheme. It acts as a little colorless removal action, so a lot of different decks can side with that card and feel good about it. Also, does some random goofy stuff like proliferates your Vivid Lands, proliferates your Depletion Lands, doesn't take too much work for that to start getting good. If I had a Contagion Clasp, I would consider picking up some Depletion Lands. I mean, that's powerful when you can get to that kind of effect.
Yeah, along that same line, I've been looking at the Living Weapon that is a
Mortarpod?
Mortarpod.
Yeah,
Mortarpod.
I love Mortar Pod.
And I've tried a couple of the Living Weapon. I tried the Scythe one, the 3-mana 2/2.
Yep.
And that I haven't really been happy with those, but that I think Mortarpod might be another way to introduce some interesting things.
Mortarpod is an absolutely sweet card. For some reason, I actually always thought it was in your cube.
No, I don't. I might have had it at the very beginning, but
I'm actually really surprised by that because
the color section has gotten kind of, you know, upwards of 25% of the color section has kind of gotten has gone back and forth because I added a whole bunch of the colorless Eldrazi, the Emerge guys from Eldritch Moon, and then we added all the vehicles. So
yeah.
that section has gotten kind of wildly shuffled in the last couple months, and I think as we start to settle back in, that some of these the cards that are should be in there for.
Yeah, Mortarpod's a super sweet card. My friend David Phelps would definitely tell you about that. He plays Modern constantly with his stupid Sun Titan deck, and man, I got a soft spot in my heart for that card. It's a really, really quality Magic card.
Well, and if you play with a bunch of Blood Artist effects and all that, that's an easy way to enable it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It's a bit mana intensive, but it does work.
Yeah, but I mean the nature of this cube too, like the games last a little bit longer than typically. Absolutely. I mean they can, I should say.
They can, certainly.
So like
we can talk again for a minute in a more public forum about how angry I am that you cut Urza's Factory.
Oh.
Eh.
You disgust me. Listen, Urza's Factory, for those who might not know off the top of their head what it does, is a land that taps for colorless, or you can pay 7 mana, tap it,
and count them, ladies and gentlemen. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
7 whole mana, tap it, and make a 2/2 artifact creature. And on the surface, on the level 1 basic Neanderthalic, what we're going to call Ryan level of thinking, you might think to yourself, that sounds mediocre, but once you actually play with the card a little bit and realize how ridiculous that effect is in context of Common Cube, you will realize that that card is a powerhouse. It is...
The way he
describes Rise from the Tides, where it's like, oh, it's this unbeatable, like, late-game bomb threat that, like, you know, you can use to win from any situation. I've been using Urza's Factory for that exact effect for years, and then he takes it from me. How dare you?
Well, I mean, they have put in, especially in Kaladesh, that does it make assembly workers?
It makes No, it's an assembly worker, but it makes copies of creatures that are artifacts. So, like, it copies a creature, but the copy.
No. The Urza's Factory, does it make assembly workers?
Yes, it does.
Okay, because there's a number of there's self assembler. They pushed that little Easter egg several times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And sure. there is a new one from Kaladesh that allows you to create a copy of an artifact creature and. I considered it, but there just aren't enough artifact creatures in the cube.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's cool in that same space where, like, you know, you're kind of... It's like a pseudo-blink for a come-into-play creature, right? Because you get...
Well, my thought was that, okay, maybe if I brought all the splicers back, that you might have... Between splicers...
The splicers are so good.
And the fabricate creatures, you could maybe... And your whirler rogues, etc. You could maybe get enough artifact creatures in as tokens that you might be able to get there, but that seemed like a lot of... reconfiguring
the splicers are super good. I forgot that those actually weren't in your cube anymore because I had Wing Splicer, Vital Splicer, Master Splicer, and I think Maul Splicer. I didn't have Sensor Splicer. But I had all of those cards in my uncommon cube, and they were always so good. They were so good. And I remember they were in your cube for a while, and I always thought they were great, and then I guess they must have gotten cut at some point, and I didn't really notice because... Like, kind of one of the tough parts about any cube ownership is the fact that if you want to play with new sweet cards, something has to come out, and they're usually great, but, yeah. Like, at some point, you gotta come out.
Well, you see me agonize all the time. It's like, I want to play with all of these new cards, but I can't make 50 slots. Just go away.
Yeah, no.
Not with that attitude.
The splicers are really just a victim of... the new cards being so good on rate that splicers were good because of really their rate.
Yeah.
And that, you know, when you're getting 2-mana 2/3s and better than that often in some cases, you're starting...
3-mana 3/2s that bring back permanents.
Right, yeah. The rate on the new ones are so powerful that you know, 2-mana, 2/3 death lifelink death touchers.
And oh my god.
Yeah, you're really struggling to play, like, oh, like, okay, I get a reasonable creature, but... And that, for a long time, that there was enough bounce in this cube that it was... They got kind of punished. That,
sure.
You were really soft to the, you know, the Crystal Shard deck. Yeah,
play this 4-mana duder that makes a 3/3. Oh, lose my 3/3. Like,
you know, but you were so good in the Crystal Shard deck.
You could certainly combo.
Yeah.
So, as we move to kind of a conclusion here, do you have a favorite story or anecdote, Mason, of a victory or a defeat?
Yeah, you've definitely played his cube the most besides Ryan himself. So.
God, that's tough.
Probably involves shitting on some boss lanes despite their hate.
Honestly, I actually get so much enjoyment out of, like, every time I cube draft and every time I play your cube draft. I will say one of the most memorable experiences that came out of your cube draft was just a couple of weeks ago. Now, there have been stretches playing with your cube that I have gone undefeated across many cube drafts, multiple in a row. There was, I don't know, maybe 2015 or something, where I declared it as the year that I was not going to lose any matches in your cube, because maybe the first four that we did of the year, I 3-0'd, and I was just like, oh, it's, I don't know, mid-April, I'm never going to lose, not going to lose a match in 2015. Called it out. Obviously, I lost at some point, but I 3-0 your cube all the time, and I love it. And that's the brag. Because the most memorable thing that's happened to me in quite a long time in your cube was a couple of weeks ago where we did 2 back-to-back, and I think I might have won 2 games across both cubes. I went 0-6 in convincing fashion. I got absolutely destroyed. With 2 decks that I thought were pretty good. Like, I didn't think they were embarrassing. They were right in my wheelhouse, things that I like to be doing. I will say, anytime that I draft your cube with my roommate Reed, who has a cube, we always fight over cards because we just like playing similar decks in your cube. So but I'm the one who likes to get crazy and greedy, and he just likes to, like, slow it down and play the 2. Like, when he's getting cut off, his instinct isn't like, oh, I need more colors in this deck, you know? That's kind of where I go. So his decks often look a little bit more refined than mine when we're fighting, like, sitting next to each other or fighting or whatever. But, yeah, the most memorable thing I think that happened to me in the last couple of years of drafting your cube was getting brick-walled and just fucking destroyed. Because, honestly, like, all the victories, they all feel so sweet, but they feel great in a way that makes me feel very smart. Like, when I'm winning playing your cube, I feel God, so I can't intelligent. Sit through this. Yeah, that's fair. Because for the most part, I think that I approach a lot of the cube drafting in a different way than a lot of people in our group. So I always think, aha, I'm just doing something completely different than you were doing, and look who's winning. Aha, I'm so great. So to get absolutely destroyed by things that I usually beat was, like, really just, is biting.
Was it humbling? Was it a humbling experience?
For, like, 2 weeks, I sat there just thinking about, like, revising my entire cube drafting strategy. Like, I've just been, I really want to get back and draft your cube again because, like, I just need to make sure that...
Pulled off those rose-tinted glasses,
I need to figure out if it was, like, a one-time thing, or, because there have been some sweeping changes in the last few, maybe, like, the entire way that I approach the cube draft needs to change on a fundamental level, because all these changes might have pushed things up to the power level that they hadn't been at before. So maybe these aggressive decks that I never really gave too much credit to or whatever are actually so much better now, after the last few sets have been added to Magic, that really go back and reevaluate. Or what's more likely is I get to continue playing the kinds of decks that I like and the things that I think are good. I just need to reevaluate my decision-making process through the draft. Because in Common Uncommon Cube, at least, the thing that I love the most about it, outside of just playing, you know, fair interactive Magic, is the fact that if you really consider all the things that you need to be able to beat during the draft, I feel like you can craft decks that can beat almost anything. Mid-range decks in Common Uncommon Cubes feel great because you can draft, like, very general answers and very specific ways to beat specific archetypes that you might play against that if you really hold it in your mind the whole time, you think, I need this number of cards to be able to beat these aggressive decks that I know I'm going to play against. I need this late game plan to come together so that I know that I can beat these control decks that I might play against. I think you really get rewarded for that kind of thing. And that's why the actual draft experience in the Common Uncommon Cube is one of my favorite things in the world. So getting absolutely fucking destroyed. Yeah, it was a humbling experience. It made me think I might just need to reevaluate the whole thing. Which is great. I love it. I love relearning things I think I know.
Certainly one of the reasons to introduce combo is to that you had basically outlined in your year of outstanding finishes that recursion was the most powerful late game thing you could possibly do.
Absolutely.
You could recur something, Palakaworm, Acidic Slime, whatever. That was the most powerful thing you could do, even in the face of a very hard control deck. I remember getting destroyed when I was as hard a control deck as I could possibly be. And then I had to have sideboard cards specifically. I had to find the Nihil Spellbomb to stop the recursion so I could actually win. Because I had Flood, I had Pestilence. I had that phase locked down, but eventually
just wear them away.
Getting Acidic Slimed out of the game.
You can't Pestilence block a worm out of the game.
or any time, you know, you run into people who are in mid-range fights and one of them has that even more over-the-top thing. It's like, yes, you know, you've played 7 and 8 drops and have made it to the final stage of your plan, but it's like, well, I played my 7 and 8 drops, but I also have, like, this Diabolic Servitude or this Crystal Shard or this Mist Meta Witch that's just given me that little extra.
Now I get to play my 7-drop 5 more times, you know.
That just, like, I mean, once you find that thing that you're going to loop, like Ryan said, I mean, that's really, I think, what sets apart.
Would you call that the Eternal Command draft archetype?
There are no cards that are commands, so okay. No. Like, if you had Kolaghan's Command, like, Cryptic Command, maybe even Mystic Confluence, like, yes, I
so
would.
So you concede, then, that an archetype is not based specifically on cards?
I do think... I must be misremembering this argument, because I'm pretty sure you can I was saying that you can specifically define archetypes by the cards that are in your fucking deck.
Yeah, and I'm saying you can't. You can't call it Eternal Command.
You're right, you can't call that deck Eternal Command, because it's not Eternal Command. But you can call it, like, Abzan fucking Reanimator or something. Or, you know, Grixis... spell loop dot deck. I don't fucking know. Eternal Command because it's not Eternal Command. We are not going to have this argument 6 weeks removed from the last time we did. Are you kidding me?
Dude, I'm like an evil fucking ex-girlfriend. I don't let anything go. I don't draw. I will bring it up 2 months later and hold it against you.
Alright, well, Ryan, thank you for sharing your cube with us. Thanks for being on the podcast. It was a pleasure to have you share some insight on this format and your cube specifically and all the work that you've put into it.
So. Anyone building a cube for the first time, man, like, Common Uncommon cubes are amazing. Josh just talked about wanting to build one. Like, I personally...
It's been in the back of my mind for years, so...
I built mine for budgetary reasons when I first built a cube. I had played my friend's cube that was all powered up. And I loved it so much, but I wanted to build one, and I couldn't afford it, so I built a Common Uncommon Cube. And at this point, like, having an unlimited budget, whatever, I would still go back and build it. Like, they're such great experiences, and they're not that expensive. You can slap one together pretty cheaply, and it's super fun. If you ever wanted to get into cube drafting, I highly recommend this. It's great. Teaches you so much about building cubes.
Yeah.
When you actually build one and have it together and, like, make changes, deal with new sets coming out, all that stuff.
And it's closer to your respective, like, actual limited environments, you know? So if you want to get a feel for that, but you want to play with very specific cards, like, and just become better at drafting, this is a great way to do that without having to actually spend a bunch of money on packs all the time, too, or just to up your game, or craft an experience that you'll have fun playing at low entry cost. So
absolutely. Yeah, thank you, Ryan. Hopefully we'll get another chance to draft it before you leave forever.
Yeah. And like, you have, like, what, that 2 weeks? You haven't been 2 weeks?
That is the hope. Yes.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, let's do this at least one more time.
Get some more in. I would really like to see in a larger draft how this zombie tribal deck comes together.
Yeah, somebody actually forces it instead of, like, ruining it by say they're going to force it.
Yeah, that'd That sounds sweet. That sounds sweet.
My bad. So
planting your false flag.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, as always, you guys can hit us up on social media and such.
We'll answer all your questions, probably. Yes.
Yep. Thank you for listening.
Au revoir.